here's two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Xavier Will. Scott Goble. RX Muscle Australia proudly presents Aussie Muscle Radio. Yeah!
Welcome to another episode of Aussie Muscle Radio. It's 31st of March 2014. I'm Xavier Wills and I'm joined as always by my co-host and compatriot in crime, Scott Goble. Scotty, how are we doing this week?
Doing very well, mate. Just kicking back with the feet up, dragging the cankles.
how's the off-season going? Are you putting on extraordinary amount of weight or?
Nah, I've leveled off and dropped a little bit of fluid, so I'm all good. I'm sitting where I should be sitting, nice high 120s and enjoying life.
Very nice, very nice. I like it. Scotty, I don't know if you know, but this is our 100th episode of Aussie Muscle Radio.
Hey, yeah, good stuff.
We've got there. And we haven't missed a week as well, which is, I think, is pretty impressive.
Well, you maybe haven't missed a week, but I've skipped a few here and there.
The show hasn't missed a week.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I know, so I'm quite happy with that over all the Christmases and New Year's and all that shit and competing and all that stuff. So I think that's pretty impressive. And Gally and I talked about it a bit at the end of the show as well, how we haven't missed one. And on this show as well, we've got a big show ahead of us. We've got Vince Taylor, who's I'm going to be calling in with him tomorrow. Fingers crossed, obviously, that all happens and comes through and stuff, but we will have Vince for Prince Taylor. And for those who don't know, Vince Taylor is basically a legend of the sport. I'd consider him that anyway. And he's placed high in Olympias. He's won... How many Masters Olympias has he won, Scotty? Do you know? Is it four? Five?
Yeah, it's up there. He basically ruined it for everyone else.
Yeah, so I'll be researching that and obviously getting all the facts. And I'll be interviewing him tomorrow morning, which is a massive deal because he's actually one of my idols. And when he came out to Australia... when was it? When he came out, and I think he placed second or so in his comeback show.
2006, was it? The Gold Coast one?
Yeah, that was 2006. And then I think in 2007... was the first one I actually went to go watch, the first Australian Pro I went to go see, and he competed then as well, and that one was back in Melbourne. And he's just awesome on stage. He has that awesome routine with the Terminator and everything, like the Terminator. He like was the originator of that, and then he was just, I don't know, he just plays it up on stage. Like someone said, oh, great cars, Vince, and he kind of turns around and points at him and like nods at the crowd and stuff. And I think he's just, he's awesome to watch on stage. Like, he's just an entertainer, and he just seems like a great guy overall as well.
Yeah, no, he was real charismatic on stage and known as one of the best posers of his era. And yeah, he did. He was the first with that Terminator stuff and that robot walk, I think. So he's got a lot to answer for because I've seen a lot of mediocre impersonations of that over the years.
I know, there's been so many, hasn't there? There's a few that do it well, but there's a lot that do it very average. Especially at an amateur level, you see a lot of average ones.
Yeah, you sure do. I think it's unless you can absolutely nail it, then don't do it.
Yeah, if you're Melvin Anthony or someone like that, then yeah, you can get away with it. But not if you're, just a very, a somewhat average poser or you don't have... I don't even think we could do it, Scotty, and we pose okay, so...
Yeah, no, I'm not attempting it.
Nah, me neither. But now, Scotty, I want to quickly launch into a few topics, and we've got a decent length Ask Scotty and Bodybuilding Yes or No, so we'll kind of keep this first segment pretty short, but something that I kind of found interesting, we heard all this news about Brandon Curry possibly moving to 212 class, and it seemed like on a lot of bodybuilding media that a lot of them kind of just said it was as if it was fact, as if it was happening, and Brandon Curry, after the Arnold Classic, will be moving on to do 212. And it kind of sounded like, if you can get down to the weight and it's not too difficult, then, he may as well. But his wife's kind of come back on and kind of really put that to bed. And she said, okay, we hear it all the time in magazines, on social media outlets, on webcasts about Brandon moving to the 212 class. For those who don't know, Brandon is my husband, blah, blah, blah. She says, will he be making the switch? Let's get this story straight. From us, not the writers or critics and opinions based on the facts at all. No, this is bodybuilding, a sport in which athletes strive to build muscle and dedicate their gym time and diets to do so. It is not about losing muscle, or so I thought anyway. So she goes on to say a lot of stuff about that, and she's basically saying, no, he's not doing the 212 class. That's ridiculous. What did you, I mean, obviously you would have heard the news about him possibly moving to the 212. What do you think about the whole thing? You know what I mean? Like, because obviously it was reported, it was, seemed like it was fact, and they're coming out now and saying it was just a load of crap.
Yeah, look, I mean, to be honest, I didn't hear the news.
You didn't hear.
And had I heard it, I would have instantly dismissed it. I mean, anyone that turns pro as a heavyweight, with the exception of maybe Aaron Clark, and even then, I sort of, anyone that turns pro as a heavyweight, I see them as maybe they'll start their career in the 212 and then move on to the open. But no, I never, even when I saw the thread pop up dismissing it, I didn't even open it, because to me it was just, it was unbelievable, because like you said, Brandon was probably over 212 when he turns pro, and then he's built some muscle since then. Like, he's definitely thickened up. So why would he drop down to 212? I just didn't understand it. I mean, he's won a open Arnold Brazil, so he's obviously competitive at that level. He's got a, was it an eighth or something in a Mr. Olympia? So I either completely dismissed the rumor to the point where I can't remember it, or I just didn't hear it in the first place.
Yeah, and it was reported, and do you know where I reckon it was from? I reckon, because it happened straight after the Arnold that it came out, I reckon he's disappointed with his placing, and someone probably mentioned it to him, and he might have gone, yeah, or he might have even been joking, and something came out of that, and he, you know, maybe it was to someone who worked for Flex, or someone who worked for MD, or something like that, and I reckon it just grew. I reckon they told someone, and it kind of got around at the Arnold, and then it kind of just became fact among all these people, so I reckon that's something that happened, because I can't imagine, you know what I mean, like, obviously, it didn't come out from him. He didn't say to any media outlet or anyone that he's definitely doing it. I reckon it was just all hearsay. And it seems like in bodybuilding especially, actually, it seems like in media overall now, that people don't focus on getting the facts, and they just publish things. And not, they publish it as facts as well. They don't publish it as a rumor. They publish it as fact when they actually haven't got it from a horse's mouth.
Yeah, it'd sort of be like a, you know, a Luke Shembri turning pro at 98, 100 kilos and then sucking down to 212 and pussying out because he didn't want to be up against the big boys. Oh, shit, actually. Luke's talked about that, hasn't he? Ooh, that could have been offensive. Sorry, Luke.
When you started saying that, I was like, no, that's what's happening. But no, you're just taking a piss, clearly. But yeah, I mean, what do you think about Brandon Curry? Because when he did turn pro, like, there's all this hype, and he was just round, full, big dude. Like, he looked like he had all the potential in the world. And like you said, he's placed eighth in the Olympia. He won an Arnold Brazil. He's kind of the right place at the right time, especially with the Arnold Brazil show. But, I mean, he's never really realized his potential. And I don't think he's any... to me, he doesn't look any bigger than when he turned pro. I mean, can you see Brandon, you know, making big improvements at any point and shocking people?
Not anymore. Like, he's had enough time. I think he has improved. I think he's brought up his hamstrings and his adductors and stuff like that. I think he has made progress, but I don't think he's going to suddenly come on in leaps and bounds and walk on stage a monster. So now I see Brandon sort of stuck as a second-tier pro, a very pretty physique, popular because he's got that marketable look and small waist and everything else, but I don't think now he's going to take it up a notch and be a contender for the big titles.
Yeah, for sure. Now, me and Mick talked a little bit last week about the upcoming this year's Arnold Brazil show, and it's looking to be like a really, really good show. So we've got, yeah, I'll mention a few of the names that are on the list at the moment. We've got Lionel Baikie, we've got William Bonac, we've got John De La Rosa, we've got Marius Doan, who's making a comeback, who actually, I remember, he actually had some health problems and things like that, and he said he'd done his last show and stuff, but he's coming back. We've got Tony Freeman, we've got Mike Kefalianos, the Aussie Greek, we've got Martin Kellstrom, Steve Kuklo, Juan Morel, Ed Nunn, Robert Piotrkowicz, Fred Smalls, Rolly Winkler, if he obviously decides to compete, which I don't think will be happening, and Hidetada Yamagishi. So we've got a really good lineup there, and I mean, Scotty, this is leaps and bounds better than last year's Arnold Brazil.
Yeah, it is, and it's one of those really interesting shows where there's no name that's so big that the judges will be looking at them first. There's no one that's a automatic first call-out guy just on the basis of name and reputation. So it'll be really interesting to see how, you know, Kuklo and Juan Morel go up against Baikie and Bonac. So, I can't wait. I can't wait for this show. It's going to be tough to crack the top six. You know, some good guys are going to come in off and they're going to fall down and yeah, you know, there could be some surprises. Maybe Biyuki comes in dynamite condition and blows everyone away, and we talk about him as an Olympia contender. Maybe Kuklo all of a sudden comes in great condition and, you know, he capitalizes on his size and structure. So there's a lot of what-ifs. But on the basis of recent showings, I'm still going Bonac.
Yeah, same here. I'm going Bonac as well. But it would be interesting to see if, like, someone like a John De La Rosa, who, you know, height-wise and, I suppose, muscle-wise, would somewhat match up with Bonac. And, you know, maybe William Bonac is a little bit tired by the time he gets to Viana in Brazil. But, you know, I think he might compare well to William Bonac. And I think John De La Rosa actually might benefit from William Bonac being in the lineup.
Yeah, look, I'm a big fan of John De La Rosa, and he improves every showing. So he looks like he's getting bigger and bigger, and he always comes in tight. So I think he'll beat some good guys. He'll probably be a top four guy, just because I think he'll dial it in on the day.
Yep. If you had to pick out of if you had to pick out of Juan Morel and Steve Kuklo, who were guys that battled in the NPC. Who would you pick out of those two? Because they kind of almost seem like they've built up a rivalry. They always competed in the New York Pro at the same time, and they've competed in a few other shows at the same time as well. Who do you have winning out of Juan and Steve?
Probably Juan. Even though Steve beat him in the amateurs and probably had a lot more hype going in the pro ranks, I think Juan's improved a lot since he's turned pro, and I don't know that Steve really has, and Steve's always just sort of rocked up, hardish, never really 100% conditioned like Juan does pretty much every time. So it's a good little battle there, but I'll probably lean towards Juan Morel, even though Steve Kuklo's lower body is definitely superior.
Yep. I've got one more question for you, Scotty, before we head to a break and we come back with you, ask Scotty and bodybuilding yes or no. Mike Kefalianos, obviously the Aussie Greek, do you see him getting back to the Olympia? Do you think he can do it still, and if he brings in that crazy condition?
Not unless he goes on one of his 10 show tours or something like that, and he catches a lineup in Europe where he wins it on the basis of conditioning. I don't know. I can't see him winning many of the other shows. It's pretty hard to accumulate enough points. But yeah, he has to go on an absolute tear. And I mean, I guess he's one of those guys that can do it. He can do, you know, 8-10 shows and always be in condition, so always give himself a good chance of scoring some points, but it's a big ask.
I don't know how Mike does it with all those shows. Like, I was kind of thinking, oh, yeah, I can kind of rationalize in my head how Mike would compete in so many shows, but now that I've, like, competed this year and I hadn't competed in a while, you realize how bloody hard it is. I don't know how he does so many shows and just competes all year. And guys like Hede that's done it, and obviously Milos that used to do it. Like, how do you think these guys do it? Do you reckon they just get themselves to a body fat percentage where they can kind of maintain it and just go up and down slightly?
Yeah, I think they're naturally lean guys. Like, I think it's probably pretty hard for them to get out of shape. In which case, they probably don't have to punish themselves and to the extent that maybe we do to have to get in contest condition. So if it's not so much of a massive draining effort getting into contest condition, then you're not as likely to blow out after the show either. So, I just think it's easier for them because they're naturally lean. That simple.
Yep. Fair enough, Scotty. Now, on that note, we're going to head to a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes with your bodybuilding yes or no and Ask Scotty segments.
International Protein is an Australian company owned by qualified food scientist, IFBB Pro, and three-time world champion Christine Enville. At International Protein, we don't believe in selling overhyped or fad products, so you can be assured that if a product has our name on it, the formulation has been developed based on the latest nutritional research in the field of strength and conditioning performance. At the core of International Protein, there are five key principles: taste, quality, affordability, results, and flexibility. Christine Enville is proud to share her successful nutritional formulations with people who are serious about their body, their sport, and their performance, so they too can reach their ultimate goals. Look for International Protein in all good health food and supplement stores. Paying inflated prices for products which are full of hype and fillers? At Bulk Nutrients, you get the purest products available direct from our factory. There are no middlemen, contractors, distributors, or shop fronts. Bulk Nutrient stocks protein, carbs, aminos, pre-workout recovery, encapsulated products, fat burners, test boosters, and so much more. Bulk Nutrients is 100% Australian-owned and operated, and will give you higher quality and better prices guaranteed. So visit bulknutrients.com.au. It's your one-stop shop. Mass Nutrition is Australia's premier sports supplement provider, with over 13 stores Australia-wide, stocking everything from protein powders and pre-workout mixes to weightlifting accessories and gym apparel. Mass Nutrition covers all your fitness needs. Owned and operated independently by Australia's best bodybuilders, you know you're not only getting the best brands at the best prices, but you're getting truly expert advice as well. Fuel your fire at one of our Mass Nutrition retail outlets or shop online at MassNutrition.com.au.
Here's to the athlete, the bodybuilder, the figure competitor, those who are committed, those who sacrifice, those who want to be different. The ones that get up an hour before they have to, that put their body on the line for their goals and are never, ever satisfied with close enough. You can ridicule them, but you can never ignore them, because they challenge the way people make them think about themselves. And while the masses try to confine them and dismiss them, at ATP, we celebrate their achievements, their dedication, and why they improve the world. Visit us on Facebook or at www.atpscience.com.
My Muscle Chef is the perfect solution for anyone who doesn't want to spend hours cooking, cleaning, and doing groceries every week. You can now focus on your training knowing your diet is taken care of. All you need to do is microwave and eat. To order, simply jump online at MyMuscleChef.com or call 1-300-364-993.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. I'm joined once again by Scott Goble, and we are here for his Bodybuilding Yes or No segment and Ask Scotty segment as well. Scott, are we ready?
I'm ready.
Now, first question, bodybuilding yes or no. Will Quincy Winkler ever win an IFBB Pro Show?
No. No, Quincy only got about two-thirds of the chromosomes of his brother, and he's two-thirds of the bodybuilder. So, no, I mean, his showing it at the Arnold's was horrendous. he didn't look like a pro at all. He certainly made no progress since he turned pro. So I don't think that bodes well for his career.
Yeah, I thought maybe at the Arnold, I thought maybe he hadn't done some things maybe that his brother has done or something. But I thought if he's going to step it up, he's going to step it up for the Arnold. And yeah, it just didn't happen. So I agree with you there, Scotty, I agree. Second question, will Evan Santopani ever place top five in the Olympia?
Ooh, that's a good question. Sponsorships don't require him to compete more frequently. Apparently that's what happened this year, is that he had a requirement with a sponsor that he had to get up on stage.
Drink him as MD or animal?
I reckon it's MD for some reason.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, because he really does need to just put on some size. I don't know. Nah, top five, man. It's so tough at the top with those genetics. I just don't see him as a top five guy. I'd love to see him up there because he's a great representative of the sport. But that's the elite of the elite. I see him floating in that 6 to 10 bracket.
That, I totally agree with you there. And again, Scotty. Now, last question. This one's about you. Will you ever turn pro?
It's a good question. I don't know. I don't think there's anyone in Australia who could beat me.
Well, you got beat this year, Scotty.
Yeah, but he's a pro now.
He's gone, so.
Name an amateur who could beat me. Xavier?
Justin is Wessels.
Yeah, that's a good one. He could beat me. He's done that numerous times. But I don't think I'll see him in the pro qualifier anytime soon.
Outside of that, I don't think there's many, so, or many that can contend. So hopefully next year or the year after, I think. It's going to be, isn't it?
Yeah, well, no guarantee. That's a long way away. So who knows? Who knows? It's possible that I will never be a pro. I won't cry myself to sleep if that's the case. It's possible that I could turn pro one day and have a very, very brief pro career where hopefully I beat one other professional bodybuilder.
I like it. Now, moving on, we'll move on to your Ask Scotty segment. First question is from Dylan Phipps. He asks, he says, what do you do for ab training in off-season compared to comp prep? And he says, and do you do exercises that you believe keep your waist tighter?
I do nothing and no.
So you do nothing for abs whatsoever. You just basically just from a compound lifts, you get enough work through your abs.
Yeah, that's my theory at least. So I just don't train abs in the off season. Every now and then I'll have to demonstrate like four reps for a PT client. So maybe we could consider that an ab workout because sometimes I spasm and cramp at the end of that. But otherwise, no, I don't train them. And if you saw my waist in the off season, you would be shocked that I actually have a reasonably tight waist come contest time because it floats around 40 to 42 inches.
Yeah, mine's disgusting as well. So now next question. What's your opinion on the supplement DIM?
The what?
The supplement DIM.
Oh, DIM. That's a hard one because, McNally certainly believes in it, and I put a lot of credence in everything he believes in. I used it this year, and my glutes and hammies and my estrogenic sort of fat deposits and things like that seem to come off a fair bit easier. Now, whether you could credit it to that or a whole lot of other little adjustments I made to the contest prep, it's hard to say. But, and again, like I haven't seen legit studies done on it, but there's so much anecdotal evidence. Amanda Doherty uses it, and I've never seen her lower body come in so well. That it is something I recommend. It's one of those things where I think if you can afford it and it's not that expensive, it's something you should throw in there just on the basis of it could potentially help you. And it's certainly not going to have any negative side effects. So yeah, if you're looking at reducing sort of environmental estrogens, phytoestrogens, things like that, and getting rid of estrogenic type fat deposits, glutes and hamstrings, then I think DIM may be beneficial. Now, I'm not going to, stake my life on that or lay thousands of dollars on the line and have some study come out in the future to say that it maybe doesn't have such a profound effect. But from what I've seen, from what I've heard, and some intelligent people I've spoken with, it certainly could help.
Yeah. And is this something you'd recommend using year-round,
I think it's something you have to use reasonably long term. I don't think it's something you throw in the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's something I'd be using a good, at least the entire term of the contest prep period.
Yep, for sure. Now, next question. This one's from Milan Maras. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but sorry if I butchered your name, Milan. But he says, as a tall bodybuilder, does Scott think NABBA height classes to be more fair than IFBB weight classes?
No, not really. I mean, you can have totally different physiques in each one. Like you can have a guy who, in the weight classes in the IFBB, you can have someone who's in the under 100s, who's 5'4", like Gary Wright. I think he did under 100s. 5'4", he could be up against someone who's 6 foot tall. Is that unfair? It might be. I don't know. It is what it is, and it's the same thing in the height classes. You could be up against Mike Nyson, who's 6'5", and you could be, I think, 5'10" and a bit is the cutoff. It is what it is. You want to be as proportional and muscular and conditioned as you possibly can with your frame, regardless of height and weight, whatever. Weight's sort of just a byproduct of your development. So I don't think it makes a big difference. A good bodybuilder is a good bodybuilder, no matter where you put them.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're a smaller bodybuilder as well, you can always do Classic, which is obviously based on height and weight. And I was actually, Scotty, in at the Omara Classic, I was up against a guy who was like 98 kilos or something. So, and he was taller. So it goes to show you, I was only like, mid-80s, mid-to-high 80s. So there's still a big variation. And that was in the same class as well. So there can still be a big variation once you go over the highest weight class or the highest, height class and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely, they can. I mean, one picture I did see, might laugh. I was looking at the top three of the physique division over there at the Omara Classic. I shouldn't describe him this way, but the black dude, man, he had some crazy muscle bellies. Oh, he looked like a bodybuilder to me.
He trains at my gym, yeah.
Does he, like, at what point are you too muscular? Like, he probably didn't weigh that much because he's got that real fine bone structure and everything else, but, man, he looked like a bodybuilder in board shorts.
Yeah, he started training at my gym probably, I noticed him probably about a month ago, and I assumed he was probably doing maybe he's doing classic or maybe he's doing one of the weight classes. And then I was very surprised when I got off stage and I started watching the comp to see him in some board shorts up there. But he looks like that still. Like, he's still in the same condition, just genetically very, obviously he's got a probably good metabolism and stuff, I reckon. But he was borderline too muscular, wasn't he?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, he's impressive. But next question, Scotty. Michael Pearson asks, he says, Scotty, what do you do for your comp tanning process?
Pearson. Pearson. I use all the PKE products, so it's a pretty simple process. I apply Equinox from about 5 days out. I get about 3 coats of that on. I do generally have a bit of a base tan going, hit the solarium for the last month or so. And then after a few coats of Equinox, which isn't like your contest colors and things like that, it just sort of seeps into the skin and gives you a really sort of even undercoat, I guess.
It's like a cream.
Yeah, it's like a cream. Yeah, it's a moisturizing one. So, it doesn't really wash off. And it's sort of one of the, it actually gets darker over about 8 hours after you apply it. Then I put on contest color, 3 or 4 coats of that. And then I put on shimmer as my top coat. It always works for me. You know, some I've seen some fantastic tans this year come from Wayne Wilson's products, Suntan On and all those. So, I may experiment with those in the future, but for now, I've sort of got a formula which I know works for me. They've always been great and looked after me, so I stick with their products.
Yeah, I used Wayne Wilson's, actually, for the second comp, I used both his products. I used the Suntan On base coat, and I use the top coat as well, which I think is called Super Tan. Don't quote me on that, but you can go to his website, which is suntanon, I think, .com.au. And he supplied me with both of those. And top coat was really popular this year. I mean, Aaron Pilates used it and stuff, and I used it. And I think Justin Vigeri used it over here too. And our tans came up really well. So I want to thank Wayne, obviously, for giving that to me. And it seems like that's going to be something that probably a lot of people use that are big on Dream Tan because it's got that kind of similar type colour.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It came out great. Is that what... Did Chris Thomas use it as well?
I'm not sure what he used, but he was dark as hell before he put tan on.
Yeah, best colour I've seen. Like, he was just... He looked absolutely awesome. So, yeah, no, it was good. And I must admit, I'm a little bit distracted here by all these notifications going off in the background. You can probably hear them. It's all due to an RX post with the pro qualifier gallery and results and things like that. So for those of you that want to check that out, it's all uploaded now, which is exciting. And I'd also check out the post on Facebook in the ensuing conversation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Go on Facebook and type in RX Muscle Australia and check out the latest picture. If you want to get out some popcorn and just watch what's going on there, because yeah, it's an interesting little, what'd you say, social media war going on there at the moment, probably. So check that out. And also check out rxmuscle.com.au. We've got all our coverage up from the Omara Classic on there. If you want to see Scott Goebel's posing routine, if you want to see my posing routine, they're both up there. I'm going to be putting Chris Thomas's and Justin Figueroa's up as well. We've got interviews on there. We've got interviews with Rich Piana. We've got Branch Warren's posing routine from when he's over here. We've got heaps of content on there at the moment. So check that out. Also, I want to encourage everyone to rate and review us on iTunes to get our ranking right up there. And so we're knocking off a lot of these top sporting podcasts. And I just want to thank the sponsors as well. I want to thank bulknutrients.com.au. Check out their website, some great specials on there. International Protein, obviously Christine Enville and Troy Bremner behind that brand. Mass Nutrition, 40 stores around Australia and New Zealand. And of course, Species Nutrition. So, Scotty, that's it for you this week. I want everyone to stay tuned. We've got an interview of the week coming up with Vince Taylor and possibly talking to Matt Legg and maybe some other people as well for our 100th episode. So, Scotty, that's it for you this week. And stay tuned, everyone. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Editor-in-Chief of RX Muscle Australia, Xavier Wills, is an amateur bodybuilder who's won state titles and competed on the national level. He's been competing since the age of 16 and wants to bring his knowledge to you. Xavier offers full off-season and contest preparation plans at affordable prices to get you shredded and ready to hit the stage without sacrificing that hard-earned muscle. Xavier keeps in constant contact with his clients and offers text message support, weekly Skype or phone calls, and personalized assessments to keep you on track and get the results you desire. You can contact Xavier Wills on his official Facebook page by searching for his name. You can also find Xavier on rxmuscle.com.au, or you can send him an email at xavierwills@rxmuscle.com.au. Get in shape now. Contact Xavier Wills today.
Need that edge in your training to push past barriers, break PBs, and take the body you've been working so hard for to the next level? Well, look no further. Gripped Fitness, the brand that supports the industry and Australia's top athletes. Gripped has a complete range of lifting accessories and apparel designed to get you lifting more, while providing the needed support and aesthetics to take your body to the next level. Check them out at www.gripped.com.au. Get a grip.
International Protein is an Australian company owned by qualified food scientist, IFBB Pro, and three-time world champion Christine Enville. At International Protein, we don't believe in selling overhyped or fad products, so you can be assured that if a product has our name on it, the formulation has been developed based on the latest nutritional research in the field of strength and conditioning performance. At the core of International Protein, there are five key principles: taste, quality, affordability, results, and flexibility. Christine Enville is proud to share her successful nutritional formulations with people who are serious about their body, their sport, and their performance, so they too can reach their ultimate goals. Look for International Protein in all good health food and supplement stores. Paying inflated prices for products which are full of hype and fillers? At Bulk Nutrients, you get the purest products available direct from our factory. There are no middlemen, contractors, distributors, or shop fronts. Bulk Nutrients stocks protein, carbs, aminos, pre-workout recovery, encapsulated products, fat burners, test boosters, and so much more. Bulk Nutrients is 100% Australian-owned and operated, and will give you higher quality and better prices guaranteed. So visit bulknutrients.com.au. It's your one-stop shop.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. This week, I'm very privileged to be joined by the winner of 22 IFBB Pro Shows, 5 Masters Olympias, and a true legend of the sport of bodybuilding, the one and only Vince Taylor. Vince, welcome to Aussie Muscle Radio.
Hey, thank you very much. The pleasure is all mine, and a special hello to all my fans and friends out there in Aussie land. I love Australia, and all I want to say is good day, mate.
Now, your nickname, Vince the Prince Taylor. I want to first start off by asking, how did you get that nickname?
Lonnie Teeper gave me that name. I think I heard it first from him when I started pro bodybuilding. And my AKA usually, and it's always Vince Taylor, the Quiet Storm. But he came with Vince the Prince, and then it just seemed to catch on with a lot of people in different countries. And I'm like, okay, Vince the Prince, one day we'll be king.
I love it. And you were king, obviously, 5 times on that Masters Olympia stage.
Yes,
as well.
Sir.
That's a massive achievement because no one's gone close to that. What do you think about, obviously, they've brought back the Masters Olympia. They brought it back, I think, last year, and I don't think it's going to happen this year. But what did you think of that, and do you like the idea of a Masters Olympia being back in some capacity?
Yes, I did. You know, and actually, I was in Miami because I live not too far from Miami. I'm in Pembroke Pines, Florida. And the promoter, Jocka, who, you know, she notified a lot of the people about wanting to do that event. And I thought it was fantastic. She also wanted me to compete, but I was like, been there and done that. You know, I was kind of out the game for a few years now. And when I saw the opportunity that these guys were going to be able to come back and get back on stage, it was perfect. But only disappointment I had with that type of comeback and even the show itself was they didn't quite make it fair enough. You know, some of the guys that were competing were Samir Benooks, some of the older legend guys that have been out there for quite a few years, and they're running up against the younger legend guys, as you want to put it. The Masters, being at the age, was only at 40. You know, you and which was standard, but you got guys at 60 trying to compete, and she didn't make any classes. It was one big pot of guys, and I thought that was a little bit unfair.
Yeah, but so you thought it maybe should have been like over 40s, over 50s, over 60s?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because, you know, these guys, you're training hard, your physiques are trying to maintain, and some of these guys look really good. I mean, if you take myself, for example, at 51, I came back and did the Open Mr. Olympia after five-year layoff and made top 11. But my quality at 50 wasn't going to beat the, you know, Dexter Jackson at 40-something. And, of course, the other guys that came in right under him. These guys are hovering around 40s. And then when you come back out there, you know, it was pretty hard for some of those guys to do. No, I was able to do that. Okay, don't get me wrong. I was able to do that and spank a lot of young guys when I did my 50 return. But when I saw the Masters and these guys that were just getting back into the game, been out for a while and over 50, compete against 40-year-olds, that's a day and night physique, day and night.
Yeah, for sure. Now, there's so many questions I want to ask you, but
we'll
launch into your comeback in 2006. You came back at the 2006 Australian Pro Grand Prix, which was held up on the Gold Coast in Queensland, yes. Australia. And you placed a very impressive third. I think it was just after, Ronnie Raquel and Lee Priest. You placed third.
And Lee Priest, exactly. Actually, I won that show, but that's okay. We're going to give it to him.
But yeah, obviously it was a very impressive comeback. I don't think anyone was kind of, I mean, you had a four-year layoff. I don't know if anyone was expecting that kind of quality at 51 years old.
Exactly.
And yeah, you looked absolutely sensational. What was that like coming back and then obviously doing so well?
Well, it was amazing because after I decided to give it another shot, you know, again, I had taken the furthest away trip from America I could find to come and qualify. I had died to get to Australia years ago, and things were never happening to bring me to Australia. And when I had that opportunity, it was like, okay, first of all, you get to go to Australia. That was great. And you're going to be so far away. Nobody's expecting anything of you. And I put my preparations together. It was probably one of the best preparations I was able to do. I did everything by Vince Taylor way of training, nothing textbook. And I was able to test it out in Australia, and it just came together. It was so beautiful being there. We were in Brisbane, and it was amazing, okay? And I was thinking, okay, I kind of like that, you know, let's do it again. So I came to Australia. I had a time in my life, and then did well, and then took it back to America and came in quite well at the Olympia.
Yeah, 11th place at the Olympia. Obviously, you just missed out on the top 10. I mean, that's very impressive, though. 11th place at 51 years old in the Olympia. That's almost like that's like what Albert Beckles was doing, you know what I mean? He was in.
I should have been 8th or 7th, I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, I have to go back and look at all those pictures and stuff because it's interesting going back and looking. I mean, we do actually, yes, me and my co-host, we go back and look at some of the past Olympias, and we call it the greatest Olympias of all time. We talk about, you know, the guys that were in the show and what they're doing now, and I'm sure we've talked about you a few times in there as well.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, and we kind of reminisce on that, and our listeners actually really enjoy it because they get to hear some names maybe that are, you know, even still competing, or some really old school names and stuff. So obviously you're going to be featured in a lot of those ones, but because you've obviously done, you've done a fair few Olympias and a fair few Masters Olympias, and it's actually going back and looking at, I was going back and looking at some interviews and stuff you've done and stuff as well. And you were actually, you lived in Germany for a fair while. Is that right?
Absolutely. I was in Berlin, and for about 13, 14 years, I lived in Berlin.
And that's amazing because you obviously were over there for quite a long time. And then after that, the next, I think it's 1 or 2 years after you got out of that, you actually went on to win your pro card.
Yeah, well, see, I started in Berlin. You know, that's exactly where bodybuilding started, and probably about 82, 83. By the time I got in 85, no, let me think back, 84, 85, I tore my bicep, and bodybuilding was supposed to be like over. And with about a 7 to 8 month rehab on my left bicep, I got back into the sport. And then my goal was to be Mr. America. So I came over here to Atlantic City, flew from Berlin to America again in Atlantic City, and I won my class as Mr. America. And while I was here, they were saying, you need to do the nationals. Well, I didn't even know what the nationals was. I'm like, what is the nationals, okay? So I jumped into a show and to qualify for the NPC, won my light heavyweight class, got into the nationals, did not know any of the guys, Deshaun Ray's, the I mean, all the guys. This is American bodybuilding at its best, amateurs. And I came away with fourth place, you know, after tearing my bicep, you know, 7 months, like I said, almost a year before that. And I told those guys, wow, you know, if you like me now, I had a whole half a year off. I'll be back next year with a good bicep. And I came back and won the overall national championships. So that was kind of quick. And then 1988 was that. 1989, I did my first pro show. Won that in New York. And 6 months later, let's go to the Olympia. And I was top three in the Olympia. So it went really quick.
That's amazing to be a national champion. And then that New York show, was that the Night of Champions back then?
Yes, Night of Champions, my first debut.
Wow, and then top three at the Olympia. That's absolutely incredible. Like, you don't hear of anyone doing that these days. And especially, I mean, you weren't. It's not like you were training for 15 years at that point, you know. You only normally hear that from
people don't. Yeah. Exactly. People don't realize. I started training in bodybuilding at the age of 27, you know. And by the time I was 33, I was top three in the world, you know. So it's like, whoa. So it didn't take long.
Yeah, it's got to be a massive confidence boost. Have you ever, like, in your career, whether it was, you know, before your comeback or anything like that, have you ever doubted yourself and doubted your ability to get on stage and be your best?
I can't say yes, I doubt it, but not because I wasn't going to be my best. I only doubted myself because I knew that every show I went into, I never went into to say I'm going to win. You know, that was not Vince Taylor. I watched the game as a fan for years and the magazines while I'm sitting at my workplace in Germany, watching it, looking through the bodybuilding magazines, looking at Lee Brada, Lee Haney, Richie Gaspari, and like, wow, look at these guys. You know, they're fantastic and everything. And then start training. And within a few years later, four or five total, I'm on stage with Lee Haney. And then I'm beating Richard Gaspari. I'm at the top of the game, top three in the world with these guys. Who would have thought of that 4 years prior to that? And but I never doubted anything except for the fact that I knew I wasn't going to win the Olympia, so I'm not going to doubt that I can, but I know it's just not going to happen. So I just kind of have fun every time I went out because my expectation level was never the fact I would win that big show. But I would give a lot of guys outside of that big show who beat me, the guys who didn't beat me, now you got a problem.
Yep.
I doubt if you can beat me.
Now, you obviously, you did, you won five Masters Olympias and you got second at another one, so you did six in total. Did you ever slightly regret doing the Masters Olympia and think, where would I have placed in the Mr. Olympia? Do you think there's a year where you could have even won it?
The Mr. Olympia, no. I thought that Lee Haney was too dominant, and when Lee rolled over and Dorian came in, even though I was third again, my third Mr. Olympia, you know, behind Lee Haney, Dorian Yates, and myself, top three, I didn't think that I had what it would take to beat a Dorian. And then as you saw, Dorian kind of homesteaded it for years, and then, of course, came my superhero Ronnie Coleman, my big friend. And, you know, you got kind of like looked at top spot and said, nah, never going to happen. I made a decision to do the Masters only because I knew that turning 40 and training with these younger guys, that my wins were going to be kind of like diminishing. Because as you know, 91, 92, I believe, I was on a roll. I was winning seven shows in a row. Came back to win the Arnolds and come back and win the San Jose and then, you know, what we call the Big Three. I was actually, man, just racking up some wins. But then Flex Wheeler started popping into the picture. Levin Rohn started popping into the picture. And you saw these guys were going to be pretty hard to beat, you know, in a year or two to come. So that kind of centered itself right around me turning 40, thinking, it's time to do something prestigious. You know, the Masters Mr. Olympia had that Sandow, and I wanted to collect those Sandows. So my game was to win the Masters Mr. Olympia for 10 years. I got five and a half. You know, I won the Arnold Classics, one and only Masters International Championships. And, of course, when they took that last Masters Olympia from me, which I do believe I won, that was enough for me. You know, I was like, okay, I'm not going to get it. Not because I don't have the physique. That was history to be made. But I can't beat that pin from them judges.
Yeah, and you mentioned that one that you think you should have won. That was in 2002. Was that like a tough pill to swallow? Because that was actually your last Masters Olympia, I believe, you competed in.
It was, because the year before that, they made a whole lot of uptake about me being beat by some other guy. who didn't even have his birth certificates right. And then I saw that the inner core of what was happening, you know, a little bit about the inside of bodybuilding. As a competitor, you go to these events, you know where you're ranked, you know what you do to win, and you know everything about you when it comes down to getting ready to do what you do. So when I surveyed the field each and every year, I saw no competition. And then the year prior, it was, this guy can beat Vince. And I'm looking at this guy going, who are you talking about? And then they showed me this guy. He died, kind of rest in peace. But this young blood guy. Now, that same year, prior to them giving him that win, they were telling me he was going to beat me that year before. And I'm going like, he's not going to beat me unless he has an army with him. You know, so that's not even going to happen. But let me tell you, during the prejudging, when I got to that prejudging and after the prejudging, I was in third place. Wow. It was like, who's in first? Well, this young blood is in first. John Hananashak, who happens to be a judge, he was in second place, and he was gone from the sport for 15 years. He just came back. And I'm like, I'm top five in the world in the open bodybuilding, and I can't beat this older guy or younger than me, but he has no history. He's nobody. But he was beating me in the first round. He was beating me in the second round. Hananashak was being placed over me in the second phase of the prejudging. So by the night show, I was told, you in third place. That was utterly impossible. I managed to win that show by 1 point. Okay, 1 point. I'm like, you know what? This is a joke. And then the following year, I heard through the grapevine again. You know, they're after you, Vince. If you don't come in this year, they're going to get you. They're after you. And that's what the little birds were saying. And when I got to that show, believe it or not, the fans that are listening to this tonight, you know, I'm not the biggest bodybuilding out there. I wasn't the greatest out there, no, by no means. But what I would do and what I thought I did well was posing. So when it came down to me winning and losing the Masters Mr. Olympia, my very last one, I got beat by this guy in the posing round. He outposed me. And I'm going like, well, if you can't beat me on stage with muscle, then take what I do. So you beat me in the posing round. So I lost my last chance at the Masters. So that to me was a telltale sign. You know, it's not what I'm going to do. When they're tired of you in this sport, they will get rid of you. And they showed me the door, and I just took it. I had enough.
Yeah. Was that actually the last Masters Olympia?
Yeah, that was my last. That was the one that they stopped with, but then they picked it up again a couple of years later.
Yeah,
that's when Jacobs decided to try it. So I think it died after that.
If there was one in 2003, would you have actually done it after that kind of controversy?
Yes, because I knew that I was still ready to prove something. One of the things I did when I decided to do the Masters and not do the Open Mr. Olympia, when you asked that question earlier, for one, it was a choice that I had to make. You know, like unlike Lou Ferrigno, unlike Robbie Robinson, when they won the Masters Mr. Olympia, they were allowed to compete in both Open and the Masters Olympia. I said to myself, when I win the Olympia, I'll do the Masters on Friday and I'll do the Open on Saturday. You know, I'll be, you know, give me a chance to shine on two nights. However, I was told right away that I could not compete in the Open Mr. Olympia and the Masters if I decided to do one or the other. And I couldn't believe they put that dilemma on me. So I chose to do the Masters. That's why I stopped Open Mr. Olympias. I chose to do the Masters. I thought I would fare well in my own age. Okay. These young lions were going to be hard to beat and the training would be great. But there is an end game to that. So I let that go, decided to do the Masters. My training went from really gung-ho, putting everything on the line to train, to just do what I need to do to win the show. Sometimes I didn't even train too hard for the Masters and still won. You know, so it wasn't like I was giving them my all, because I knew that the guys that were out there couldn't beat me. So I wasn't going to kill myself to get ready for a show and win. And my whole personal attitude went down behind training. I did enough to get it done. That was it. Yeah. Had I not did the Masters, I thought I'd been raring to go.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, you've just got to do what you do, got to do to beat the top, and obviously you were doing enough, and it
exactly
obviously worked well for you. But you mentioned obviously back in the early 90s when you competed, you said you got like 7 pro wins in a year and things like that, and you had Flex Wheeler competing a lot. Then you had Kevin Lavroni competing a lot.
Yeah,
it seemed like back then, and Milos Sarchev came on, he competed a lot. guys aren't don't seem to be able to do that these days. I mean, there's a few guys. There's an Aussie Greek guy, Mike Kefalianos, who competes a lot, Hidetada Yamagishi. But there's not many out there that actually are able to compete a lot or just don't choose to compete a lot. Why do you think that is? Because I competed recently myself, and I found it, you know, I kind of wondered, how do these guys compete so often?
Yeah, it's, wow, that is a real good question. During that era when we were competing, and myself personally, I saw a different goal line. It was, how did you place in this show? One, if I was in the top three and the top two guys weren't coming to the Grand Prix, for example, after the Olympia, it was like, it's time to make some money. Okay, yeah. Who's going to beat me? So let's go make some money. That was the first incentive. Then the second incentive was the shows were available to do, and they were all over the world. So it became a form of an education. And some of these guys, I just looked at them and said, I don't understand why you don't go on these shows. Get more from bodybuilding than just learning in the gym. Get an education. Travel the world. See new cultures. Meet different people. Represent yourself in a whole new different aspect. And I just enjoyed it. I mean, that to me, if I could just compete and just have going around the world, meeting people and competing and making money like I was able to do, I was happy. And I just happened to be able to do that because I was able to come back with that posing presentation I would did with the Terminator. It went viral for that time frame without the internet around the industry for years. I mean, I was flying all over the world doing that Terminator routine, and it was a pleasure just to be out there. So competing was great to get out there, make some money, do something, enjoy the fans. These guys, some of the shows were not booked anymore. Some of the promoters stopped booking the shows. They weren't making money, and it fell off a little bit. And then the attitudes, I believe, just changed. A lot of guys, you know, they don't really like to get out there and scuffle for them dollars.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you mentioned the Terminator routine. That was kind of my next question. Now, obviously, I think you brought that out in about 1991, I think it was, or somewhere around there. And
absolutely.
Like you said, it went viral, and it's still something that's talked about today. And there's still a lot of people doing that routine, or they're doing the walking bit version at the start and stuff. And it's like,
isn't it amazing?
What do you think about that? Like, if you go to an amateur contest or a pro contest and you see guys doing that Terminator routine, what kind of goes through your head? Is it, you like, that's mine? Or
it's true, and I just love it because a lot of people sit there and go, Vince, he's just imitating you. You know what they say, imitation is the best way of flattery. So I'm thinking, wow, that's really good. But when I step back and I look at the impact of what that routine did and what it did for me, it actually changed the entire integrity of posing and presentation and communication. You know, I went outside the box and did something that I thought would be entertaining. You know, that's what this posing was supposed to have been about. And it was, I guess, like a Michael Jackson record. He had a few, but I had a one-hit wonder. That posing routine was amazing and some of the variations, but the impact it had on the fans and the people and the competitors who wanted to do it and come into their own version of expression using their using that as a foundation, man, I thought that was my little check mark to the history of bodybuilding. That's Vince Taylor's move right there. Anytime you see that Terminator, I'll be back.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, like you said, it had a massive impact on a lot of people.
Yes.
And it's changed a lot of people's routines. And I've seen it on an amateur level. Actually, one of my friends has actually done it, and he actually did it quite well. And yeah, it's just amazing. And when people do it well, it's really good. And when people don't do it well, it's perhaps not that great.
True.
But now I've heard a lot of, like, you know, I've read some articles and stuff like that about your basically pre-contest approach, and I've heard stories like you don't do cardio, and stories like you drink some red wine while you're prepping and things like that. I mean, talk to us a little bit about your contest prep, because it sounds like you perhaps don't have it as hard as some guys.
And that's exactly true, because for one, with or without bodybuilding, I was never a big eater. You know, I would eat three meals a day, maybe two. Sometimes I get by with just one. That's just Vince Taylor before bodybuilding, through bodybuilding, after bodybuilding. So to let people understand that was something that I just had about me. I'm not a food lover, you know. I eat because you have to eat to survive, pretty much. So when it comes down to actual contest preparation, what I was able to do is just concentrate on what foods people are eating and why, how they affected me and why. And if they didn't seem to do what it's supposed to do, I wouldn't eat them. And I didn't think that I needed the amount of food that these guys were eating. I didn't think I needed the high the protein levels, because I was never a numbers guy. You know, it's not, you need X amount of grams of protein so that your body can grow. And then I asked the very same question, you know, well, how many grams of protein does my body utilize if I ate or drank a 25-gram glass of protein? You know, and how much of this 25 grams has my body utilized? They can't answer that. So why am I telling myself I need 200 grams of protein a day if I don't know what I'm using from it? So I never got involved in the numbers. Secondly, when I saw the types of food that I needed to eat to sustain my size, it became obvious to me that I'm eating this chicken for a reason. So I'll eat it for the 11 weeks that I need to eat it, and that's it, and get away from it. I will restrict what I need to. I'm not going to make my diet interesting by trying to enhance it with extra this and extra that just so it make it taste good. I just got it done. And then when I found out the no-nos, and the no-nos was this, you can't have a lot of sugar problems. Well, I hear to tell you, I've been drinking Coca-Cola for 58 years. Let's say 55, because that's when I'm 3 years old. So I drink Coca-Cola every day of my life, morning, noon, and night, through my diets. And I'm talking Coca-Cola. I don't believe in Diet Cokes whatsoever or diet sodas, any type. So Coca-Cola, red meat, and ketchup became my diet. Beef made me feel bigger. Chicken would make me get leaner, and fish would lean me totally out. So I ate those three particular proteins in that order to make sure I can keep a size through to a show approachment. Cardio. No, I don't like to run. Never liked to run, okay? But I did a little jogging because it would tighten up my lower abs. I noticed that from running. And that's the only reason why I tried to do a run. Some people ask me, how far did you run? Here's the story. I would say a mile, you know? I would run a good mile. Until one day I was driving down the road and the exit sign said, that's how far a mile is. I said, I don't run that far in a taxi cab. So my little half that mile is what I actually called myself jogging at like 4 o'clock in the mornings, just to get a little jog going. And that's about as far as I ever did until I got this plantar fasciitis in one foot, and that shut my jogging down. So no, I do not like cardio. I didn't do any cardio. I did bursts of jogging. For example, getting ready for a contest, we would do some of the competitions, you know, the tours. We would land the plane. I would go, everybody go to the hotel. Immediately, the guys would go to the buffet room and start eating. I would go to the buffet room and get me a small bowl of corn and some vanilla ice cream and a Coca-Cola. I would eat that, and then I would leave, go upstairs, put my hoodie on in a plastic bag, wrap it around me, and go for a little light jog, sweat everything off. These guys would be down there eating like free food forever, getting fat and happy, and then they come to the show the next day, they're all fat and tight. Me, I'm shredded, I'm ready to go. And then they didn't know I was running after I left the dining room, but they saw what I was eating. Therefore, they decided to eat the corn and the ice cream.
It's funny, actually, you can be quite influenced, like I found in the industry as well, like, you know, you'll see someone who's a better bodybuilder than you, and you'll see what they're eating, and you kind of
rationalize
it and make that's acceptable because they're doing it.
Absolutely. So, you know, but they don't know the hidden picture. So back to the dieting thing, you know, I've always kept it simple. You know, I ate what I needed to eat. My theory was, if you eat what you're supposed to eat for the time you're supposed to eat it, your body should react to that. So if you eat chicken, you want to look like a chicken. You eat fish, you're going to look like a fish. So for my diet, eat as little fish as possible, as little chicken as possible, get the look, and then get off the diet. And it worked.
Yep. So in off-season, with your whole dieting approach, you eat more beef and things like that?
Oh, yeah, Burger King. I've always eaten Burger King. Okay? Burger King. I got to have my burgers. I'm not really big on steaks because it's too expensive. But I can go to Burger King and have a double Whopper, man, and just have me one or two burgers that particular day. And this has been my, and again, I'm telling you about what I do even today. If you look on my Facebook page, I got a big old picture of me with a Burger King burger. But I learned that beef from my mentor and the guy who really got me involved in bodybuilding, happened to be John Brown, out in California. And his whole thing was beef. He told me from day one, if you want to get big, Taylor, you got to eat beef. Put beef on everything. And that's what I did. And I fell in love with beef from 1983 until today. So it's Burger King because it's simple. It's Wendy's. I get me a potato because if I want a baked potato, that was my diet. That's how I dieted most of the times. I go to Wendy's, get me a chicken sandwich and or Burger King, get a chicken sandwich, and then grab me a baked potato from Wendy's. On the go eating. That's how I got my meals in.
That's crazy.
And it worked.
That's awesome. So obviously you got a blessed metabolism as well, because in off season pictures, and I've seen pictures of you recently, and you're still look like you're in good shape.
I took a picture today on my Facebook. I tell my guys to check out Vince Taylor's Facebook today. 58 years old, training my shoulders. I pull my sleeves up, man. I look pretty good for an old man.
Definitely. I think if anyone out there that's listening to this, go check out that picture. I think they'd be very happy at 58 to look like that.
It's doable.
Definitely. Now, I mean, obviously you mentioned it before and it sounds like it's not something that's in your plans, but would you ever step on a bodybuilding stage again? Just say they brought back the Masters and they had, you know, the over 50s and over 60s. Would you consider it?
I would dearly consider it, but in two folds. One, I would probably be out there doing posing exhibitions first, just to get myself reorientated with the stage and trying to see if the physique would give the fans get the approval from the fans before I would take it to that extreme level. Secondly, I don't think I could, because even over the last year when I just got back into training, because I haven't been training for the last 4 years almost because of my lower back. You know, I hurt my back in 2007 preparing for the second time of comeback, Mr. Olympia. I was doing sit-ups, and I got this little pinch in my lower back. And let me tell you, for 6 weeks after that, it was straight downhill. All of 2007 up until 2009, I was done. I mean, I couldn't train. I couldn't do anything. And I got a little experiment done with my back with a chiropractor. Surgeons wanted to operate on it. They said it was a lower disc problem. And up until 2013, and from 2008 to 2013, I was not even in the gym, guys. I was not even in the gym. I just started late 2013. And when I got back in a little roll of things of training, I cannot do overhead compressing motions because it just compresses my spine and my lower back just doesn't take it. So that takes all the energy out of me wanting and thinking I could get back on stage. If I could get past this lower back, I would give it a try. I would give it a shot. Yes, I would.
Yeah, I could imagine, obviously, like you said, wanting to get back on stage, because it's going to be pretty hard to want to go and train if you're going to be in, you know, some extreme pain, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's uncomfortable because you can't do what you know you need to do. But here's the beauty. I've been able to reinvent the way I train, approach it differently. I see gains now in the way I train so much more rapidly. In the last 6 months I've been in the gym, it's amazing, you know, and I'm thinking if you could just continue doing that, your body's responding crazily. But when you go back to do what you need to do fundamentally, then your lower back says, no way. So to answer your question, I would love to, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Now you've developed obviously like a training protocol, and also you've developed products, which is called the Power Balls 50. Which I don't know if you developed them specifically for yourself or if you developed them for anyone that kind of has injuries or just a different way to hit a muscle group. But tell us a little bit about, firstly, your training principles and then obviously your new product that you brought out, the Power Balls 50.
Absolutely. The principle itself, I recalled it because looking at Joe Weider and doing all the principles that the great Joe Weider had and we followed for many years and all the rest of the bodybuilders who come up with different ways to train and everything. You know, I've been training for almost 30 years, and my look at what I've learned, what I've done by trial and error, gave me a little vision to say I know a little bit about what makes some things happen better than other things. So my type of training involved itself from injury, you know, because again, when I hurt my back, it was you can't do what you normally would do. And when I dissected movements and how we train, the barbell is the key motion. If anybody's listening, you understand that the barbell is a straight bar. The actual dumbbell is a straight bar. One's longer, one's shorter. But you will grab that barbell and dumbbell in the same fashion. If you look at any of the additional attachments to cable training, for example, everything's a bar. It's a straight bar. So you are predetermined to make a fist every time you grab the barbell. Now, what happened to me was from injury, I was trying to rehab my torn tricep that I had gotten shortly before one of the Olympias. And the actual way of rehabbing it was grabbing that little bar, the triangular-shaped handle on the cable machine, because I love cables. I've always been a cable fan. And I was trying to do some tricep extensions. And what happened was every time – and here's a visual I want you guys to visualize, because this is what my Powerball training system is all about. When you take that barbell and you make a clenched fist, and let's say, for example, you just put one hand on top of your fist and you did a curling motion as if you're pushing your resistance down, you'll notice that in the bottom part of your forearm and the bottom part of the bicep, that's where everything gathers. That's your resistance points. That's your leverage point right there. So by making a fist and doing a curling action, you can feel that bicep pull down and the power and strength build up in the bicep. If you would take that same hand approach, open that palm up, put your two fingers on the inside of your open hand palm, then curl up, you'll notice the movement of that bicep goes dramatically left to right, laterally. You'll feel the forearm explode left to right. Guess what? That's new direction of changing your resistance and training. That's muscle explosion. So what I've been able to do, and here's what happened. I'm doing some behind my head, standing in front of the cable machine, cable one-hand extensions, trying to extend that tricep. I took the handle off, as I've done many a times in the gym, and just used the cable wire. But I'm still making a fist, okay? The contraction point is still at the bottom and the base of my bicep and forearm. I was talking, and then I simply took the little small ball at the end of that retention wire, and I put it between the two fingers as if I was throwing a baseball. And I turned those, or I called the fangs. I turned it away from me, and I extended my arm out. And when I extended it out, I noticed that it only affected the outer head of my tricep. Now, mind you, I tore the inner head, the tendon of my right forearm, I mean my right tricep, right below, right beside the underarm and the inner portion of that tricep. So when I put the two fingers into that, the ball in the two fingers, and pushed it away from me, again, I felt a contraction on the outer head of the tricep. For some reason, I decided to put it between the middle two fingers. And when I did that and I extended it out, you would literally feel the resistance shift from the outer head of the tricep to the back of the tricep. And I'm like, wow, what would happen if I were to put it in the pinky finger? Because the pinky finger in the inner portion of that tricep is the area I was trying to actually hit. So when I put that ball in the pinky finger, extended it out, the resistance went directly to that inner head and that tendon that I had damaged. And I found a direct zone, I call it, to that particular portion of the tendon to the muscle. So picture your tricep head. You got the outer, the horseshoe, the back of the tricep, and then the inner portion of the tricep. I can affect each three zones, I call them now, by placing that power ball or that ball between the two fingers. So when I did that, I simply turned it over and I started training the bicep the exact same way. And when I did the bicep, the exact same thing happens. You look at your bicep and you divide it into three parts. You have the outer part of the bicep, the middle, and on the inner head of the bicep. Place the power ball in the two-finger fold, the two large fingers. You will notice that it's going to hit the outer head of the bicep. You put it between the middle fingers, it hits the middle. You put it between the pinky, it hits the inner head of the bicep. It is truly amazing, truly amazing. So when I look at trying to influence a muscle, I don't want that muscle just going up and down, being pulled up and down, but doing a normal curl. I want it to be able to affect every level of that bicep. So I can train the inner, the middle, and the outer head individually. Triceps exactly the same way. Shoulders, chest, back. Everything is being sectionized now. That's what the concept is with the power balls. Attack precision training certain sections of the tricep or any muscle you train it. Now the rotation engages like throwing a punch. You extend the punch, and when you rotate it back and you do a curling action, you keep the palm open and you drag the resistance through the bicep or any muscle that you're training. You drag the resistance. You don't make a fist, and then you leverage at the bottom of that bicep by trying to do a barbell curl. That's why the power balls are done with an open palm. The power balls are inside the finger fold. The palm stays open. Your wrist is very, very loose. It never stiffens up. You always pull with the relaxed wrist to get direct contraction on any muscle that you're training. And anybody trying this, you're going to feel an instant effect. And that works with anybody, any age, because what you're doing is affecting the muscle for contraction. See, I like to contract muscle nowadays. I'm not trying to lift. I want my muscle to get that simulation from contraction so I can contract without the weight. Once I do put the contraction into play first, I'll drag the resistance through the contraction. The beauty of that is I'm training with the power balls. I'm training your entire body. I'm training your biceps in particular with 10, 12 pounds or less, and I'm getting the job done.
Wow, so it is ideal for, like, obviously injuries, and also people that want to hit particular muscle heads and not perhaps able to, you know, activate normally, you know, because there is a lot of, you know, exercise that, you know, will supposedly hit, you know, that muscle head a little bit more, but some people still struggle to actually feel it in that head of a tricep or bicep or whatever of the muscle group it is. It seems like your system is a lot easier because you just place it between that finger and you'll feel it there, so...
You're isolating. The thing about it is, and it boils down to two things. If you make a fist, trust me, you're gathering all the power. It's going to leverage itself at the bottom of that forearm. That's why I say do the test. Make the fist, put the other hand on top of that fist, and then curl up. You feel it at the bottom of the forearm and the bottom of the bicep. Open that palm up. Open those fingers up and then curl up and feel the different explosion of muscle. That's new muscle growth. Now, where did this come from? The whole principle is called joint rotation and recoil. We're training for a reason. It came from contest preparation. I'm a cable guy. I love cables. Every time between the difference between me and 90% of your audience right now, when we're in the gym training, this is men and women alike. Everybody's doing the same thing. If I cut your heads off, you run around the gym. Everybody looks like eggs. They're doing the same exercise, the same power movements, expecting change. Bodybuilding, we know, and everybody into bodybuilding, you know that for a contest, you drop the heavy stuff, you go to the cables, and you start manipulating the way the muscle moves and where it shapes. I've simply taken an 8-week program of getting ready for a competition, using all the cable exercises I've done, put them all together in my principle, which is about, it's because it's already proven. If you do the cable workout, you will find a way to isolate the muscle, shape that muscle, and create a look. You get the look that everybody's getting to go on stage with, but I want people to be able to go on stage every day, okay? Just get yourself a look. You 24/7, train the way that you would to go on stage using cable, angles, lightweight, power balls. Create that image, that look, but you're not going on stage. This is just for you. Train for a reason. Train for shape. You can keep your size, but just train for a look. And I'm giving you the way to do that. This is simply my contest preparation training, utilizing my power balls and multiple angles, explaining to you how to attack muscles through zone training and precision training using 50 pounds or less and maximizing isolation, isometric contraction. And you will get a chiseled up physique just for general purposes. And that's what you go to the gym for if you're not on stage. Look good.
Yeah, awesome. That's awesome. I actually really want to try these because it does make a lot of sense. And like on my left arm, for example, my, you know, the outer portion of my tricep isn't as good as on my right side. So that's something I could work on through the power ball system.
Oh, easy.
So
easy. Put that ball between the two fingers, even if you just try it in the gym. Some machines in the gym have a very small retention ball on the wire. Just try it. Put the two fingers in there. Let that wrist stay really relaxed and just put it in there, push it through like you normally do, like you normally train, and let me tell you, you will feel it instantly. You're targeting, and that muscle's responded, and it will. You'll be a believer.
Awesome. And how do people get, like, if they want to get your power ball system, or if you're doing – I remember you saying before the interview you're doing some seminars and stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to launch my whole training concept in about 30 days. You know, I'm headed to the Czech Republic in May for the first 3-week Powerball seminars. I'm making contacts around the world, different countries. All I need is contacts to come into Australia and set up a Vince Taylor seminar camp, you know, all through Australia if necessary, or at one particular gym. There I'll be introducing the concept that we just briefly talked about, the principles of Powerball training, because Powerball training is a everyday workout for everybody. If you are of any sport, because we're training muscle, is what you want to do is be re-educated on how to create a different physique, a different way, less stress on your body, and then being able to put it all together and control your training. This, I'm trying to make you not clients when you go to the gym with, you know, personal trainers. You become instructors, okay? You become the person who knows what you need to do with your body. So with me, I'm a phone call away. I do my my website launch should be up hopefully in another 30 days as well. And that will be giving the people opportunity to find out more about my system. And, of course, I'm doing those individual seminars, you know, all over the world, starting in May.
Awesome. Love it, Vince. Now, I've got a few more questions before we wrap up
the interview.
Absolutely. Now, this one's kind of a little bit controversial, but is there anyone in the IFB, obviously you was in the, you know, you were in the sport for a long time, and you obviously went on these European tours, you travelled with people. Is there anyone out there that you just flat out, you know, didn't like or that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way?
Oh, there's a lot of those guys. Guys and women, let me tell you. Yeah, you know, but and all of them for a majority of different reasons. One of the here's an envious reason. You know, I had tore my tricep prior to winning the Nationals, for example, right? And I was in New York, and I was going to see the Miss Olympia. And I got into an elevator, small elevator, a friend of mine from Germany, and the door opened up, and Richie Gaspari was standing right there. And remind you, I was just in Germany at my work site with my colleagues looking through magazines. We're talking about Richie Gaspari. We're talking about these guys, people like that. And I walk into the elevator, and I'm like, wow, Richie Gaspari. I'm like 2 feet in front of the guy's face. His, you know, the lady friend was with him, and Julia Bergman at the time. This was, like I said, she was competing in that Miss Olympia contest in New York. And I said, wow, people are not going to believe it. Richie, how are you doing? He just looked at me in the face 2 feet away and didn't even open his mouth. I mean, he just looked through me. Oh, and wow. I was like, wow. I walked behind Richie to Madison Square Garden to that Olympia. And as I was walking behind him, holding my arm, I had tore my bicep. And I said to myself, that's okay. One day I'll get you. I will get you. And that's all I said. And let me tell you, to this day, God be my witness, that was a year and a half later, I won the Nationals. Okay. I had won the New York Night of Champions. My next show was the Olympia, and Haney and Gaspari were the two number one items on that list. Richie was supposed to beat Lee that year because this was his home ground. We're going to Italy. And let me tell you, when we got on stage and we lined up, guess who was lined up right beside me? And when they called out the call out, I'll never forget it. Call out number one, Lee Haney. Okay, everybody's watching and waiting, you know. Call out number two, Lee Labrada, which is on my right-hand side, okay? And Labrada and Gaspari was on my left. Call out number three, Vince Taylor. Man, I jumped off the stage almost, okay? We went out. We did our comparison pose. I came back in the lineup, and Richie turned to me and said he was shaking, okay? I'm shaking, Vince. I'm shaking. I looked at him and said, well, squeeze a little harder because it'll stop shaking. And anybody know if you tensed up and you squeeze hard, you're going to shake more. And he started shaking like a little leaf on stage. And I hated that guy for the longest time. So that's my only hate story for one guy. But I love Richie now because that was back then. He's a good guy. But for competitiveness, I didn't like what he did to me in that elevator. And I was going to prove that to him.
Came back to bite him, too.
And it bit him. I bit him hard. Labrada and I put, the nail in his coffin after that show. Because after that, Richie Gaspari disappeared.
Yep. Now,
disappeared.
Let's look on a positive light. Is there anyone who you were like close with, or anyone you like really admire in the IFB, either today or back when you were competing, you know, in the 90s?
Oh wow, yeah, a lot of good guys. A lot of good guys. I can probably Lee Haney, for example, Albert Beckles. I met Bertel Fox back in the day. He was really great. Flex Wheel is a good guy, you know. I mean, there's so many of them. And of course, one of my real good friends, you know, and I talk about him sometimes with Sonny Schmidt. You know, Sonny was my boy. You know, it was so sad what happened, but he was just a good guy. So it's like you meet some genuine great people in the sport. And, it's tons of them out there. But these are just a few guys I recall that were really good to me, very professional always. And there's more. But these guys, for some reason, just popped out of my head tonight.
Yeah. What do you think about some of the Mr. Olympias? I'll just go through a couple. What do you think about, like, Dorian Yates, for example?
Dorian was a shock. You know, he came in loaded. You know, we expected him. We saw what he had to bring. You know, I respected what he brought to the table. I didn't particularly think he was that dominant of a bodybuilder. They liked Dorian, you know, for what he brought to the stage. And no disrespect to Dorian. Dorian was, he wore the crown for a while. You know, but a nice guy, very solemn, very quiet guy. Never got along with him. Didn't go against him, but wasn't too friendly.
Yeah, so
he was all right.
What about Ronnie Coleman?
Ronnie, that's my boy. Ronnie, I think, let me tell you, Ronnie to me is the greatest bodybuilder of all times. Greatest of all times. He put things together like I've never seen before. I used to beat Ronnie all the time, you know, in 1996 when we came out of Atlanta and Ronnie started metamorphosizing in front of our eyes on that tour. Man, you know, Ronnie's my guy. You know, he's just Ronnie.
Yeah, I think everyone loves Ronnie Coleman. People love him more now that he's not the champ, now that he's not, like, you know, now that he's not still Mr. Olympia, because I think everyone wanted to see him get knocked off for a while there. But,
well, that happens. That happens.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, now that he's retired, I think now all the Jay Cutler fans now love Ronnie too. So.
Ronnie's a great guy.
Yeah, exactly. But now you have three kids, I believe. What are they doing now, and what do they think of bodybuilding? Are we going to see one of them on stage one day?
I hope not. I have a son in Germany, older son. We don't have much contact. We haven't had a father relationship in years. So I can't really say too much about what my oldest son is doing. But I have two sons here in Florida from my second wife, and they are fantastic. Vince Jr., he's in FIU, you know, Florida University, studying for business. And my youngest son, which his birthday is tomorrow, April 1st, Isaiah.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, he's April Fool's baby. And he's my track star, you know. He's really doing it big over here right now. He's running 100 meters. He's a specialist in that right now, and he's the second year out running for track. He runs a 10.64, 100 meter. And, man, he's just on fire. So we're in the midst of competition right now, and I'm just living bodybuilding and thrills of being out there through my kids, you know, especially Zay now because he's on that competitive thing, doing the sports. And, you know, he's something else, let me tell you. So I got three kids. Like I said, I got two fantastic sons here. My oldest one, not so much, but, you know, live and let live.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that with a lot of families, trust me. I mean, if my family doesn't have its, you know, has its kind of issues. But now, what advice would you give anyone, like any young guys that are getting into bodybuilding now or guys that have been into bodybuilding for a few years? Is there one bit of advice or a couple bits of advice that you would give them with getting into the sport?
Absolutely. Given the fact that the sport has gone through so many leaps and bounds and it's gotten to a point to where you have to be you can't be just a doctor in this sport. You got to be a scientist, you know, and you got to be able to keep up with everything going on for the enhancement of your physique. So the guys who are considering and women too are considering staying into the sport or moving in higher into the sport, you know, reevaluate, make sure what you want to give is worthwhile giving, because what you get from the sport is temporarily. And if it means that much to you to be on stage with guys and champions to compete, you know, by all means, go for it. Just be careful, because not everybody's going to win, and winning is not worth it at all costs. You know, there's other things besides bodybuilding. So, like myself right now, I asked myself, how'd I do it for so long? I don't even like training no more, to tell you the truth. It's too hard. But these guys out here have the fire. I mean, I love that. I love the sport, and I think they should follow their dreams. You know, just be safe, man, because it's not worth the alternative if things don't go right, you know. So be safe, be happy, make it fun, do things in it to be fun. If you can use it to change your life like I was able to do so. But there's ups and downs in it. Be prepared and be patient, because this is a slow gaining sport.
Yeah, for sure. And you've obviously shown that, and you've shown longevity in the sport as well, which is something we don't always see, especially these days. I mean, we see a lot of guys, you know, we have seen, sadly, a lot of guys pass away recently in the sport.
Absolutely.
And it almost kind of, I think it's hit home with a lot of guys as well. I hope it has anyway, because, you know, if people are seeing their peers passing away, and, you know, it could be, you know, somewhat related to bodybuilding or... you have to kind of think about it. So it's, you know, hopefully there is some good that comes of it, and guys kind of take their health and stuff a bit more seriously. And and we see a bit of a trend of guys, you know, actually, you know, taking care of themselves. Because, I mean, even Dave Palumbo, who runs RxMuscle.com,
Dave very well.
He said back in the day, he said, you know, he used to not get his blood pressure checked because he would just prefer to ignore it, you know? Quest for being big, but now he's, you know, he's all about the health type stuff now, and he's one of the healthiest guys that I probably know. So,
because he learned from experiment, you know, and experience, and this is what you see today, because it's frightening. You got guys playing guru, you got potent substances out there these guys are utilizing, and girls too. You know, it's like, that's why I say, guys, be careful. I'll tell you, look, just everybody needs to do the bikini class. You know, that's bodybuilding.
What do you think about all these new classes, Vince, before we go?
The bikini class?
Oh, bikini, men's physique, always on one.
Man, I think the men's physique class is an entertaining class for guys who have an athletic ability and want to go out, want to do something as a place for it. I respect it and I think it's cool. I just don't like it when they try to change one sport for the other. You know, oh, well, this is better than that particular bodybuilding, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't like that.
Yeah.
The women's class, the physique class, I think it's great. You know, the women who don't have that sincere desire to be super muscular, but at the same time bring on a different tone of muscle, I think is a good direction. You know, they can back off a little bit. Then the figure I think is amazing. Okay, the beauty within beauty. And then you now have that little, we call that little spunky little bikini class. Long live the bikini class.
Obviously a massive fan. But Vince, I want to thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I want to thank you for coming on Aussie Muscle Radio. You're one of the most, like, you can tell you're just full of energy, and at 57 or 58 years old, you've got more energy than I think I do, and like you're infectious as well. Like, as soon as I picked up the phone, you said, "Hey brother, how you doing?" And you just kind of gave me like an energy spike. Like, it was like a natural caffeine.
That's that Coca-Cola.
Exactly. But Vince, thank you very much for coming on Aussie Muscle Radio. Any Love last it. Thank yous or plugs you want to give?
Yeah, guys, listen, I said once before, you know, down under, as we say, man, I love you guys. I just love to get back there as soon as I can. If anybody out there is listening to this program and you would like to see Vince Taylor in Australia, man, talk to your friends, listen, talk to your contacts and say, look, let's get this guy over here for some training, for some power balls, for some bodybuilding training, some posing exhibitions, you know, let him show us how we can do what we do. All I'm saying is just bring me back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there will be some people out there listening to this that will get in contact with you either through Facebook or something like that. Because you were quick. When I sent your message through Facebook, I got a reply within a minute. So
I was sitting right here watching the screen. I'm going like, hey, I got a contact.
I love it, Vince. Awesome. I hope to see you out here in Australia in the next, at least in the next year or two. And that's Vince the Prince Taylor, 5 times Masters Olympia and winner of 22 IFBB Pro Shows.
Sweet.
Mass Nutrition is Australia's premier sports supplement provider, with over 13 stores Australia-wide, stocking everything from protein powders and pre-workout mixes to weightlifting accessories and gym apparel. Mass Nutrition covers all your fitness needs. Owned and operated independently by Australia's best bodybuilders, you know you're not only getting the best brands at the best prices, but you're getting truly expert advice as well. Fuel your fire at one of our Mass Nutrition retail outlets, or shop online at massnutrition.com.au.
Here's to the athlete, the bodybuilder, the figure competitor, those who are committed, those who sacrifice, those who want to be different, the ones that get up an hour before they have to, that put their body on the line for their goals and are never ever satisfied with close enough. You can ridicule them, but you can never ignore them, because they challenge the way people make them think about themselves. And while the masses try to confine them and dismiss them, at ATP, we celebrate their achievements, their dedication, and why they improve the world. Visit us on Facebook or at www.atpscience.com.
My Muscle Chef is the perfect solution for anyone who doesn't want to spend hours cooking, cleaning, and doing groceries every week. You can now focus on your training knowing your diet is taken care of. All you need to do is microwave and eat. To order, simply jump online at MyMuscleChef.com or call 1-300-364-993.
Editor-in-Chief of RX Muscle Australia, Xavier Wills, is an amateur bodybuilder who's won state titles and competed on the national level. He's been competing since the age of 16 and wants to bring his knowledge to you. Xavier offers full off-season and contest preparation plans at affordable prices to get you shredded and ready to hit the stage without sacrificing that hard-earned muscle. Xavier keeps in constant contact with his clients and offers text message support, weekly Skype or phone calls, and personalized assessments to keep you on track and get the results you desire. You can contact Xavier Wills on his official Facebook page by searching for his name. You can also find Xavier on rxmuscle.com.au, or you can send him an email at xavierwills@rxmuscle.com.au. Get in shape now. Contact Xavier Wills today.
Need that edge in your training to push past barriers, break PBs, and take the body you've been working so hard for to the next level? Well, look no further. Gripped Fitness, the brand that supports the industry and Australia's top athletes. Gripped has a complete range of lifting accessories and apparel designed to get you lifting more, while providing the needed support and aesthetics to take your body to the next level. Check them out at www.gripped.com.au. Get a grip.
Welcome back to Aussie Muscle Radio. I'm Xavier Wheels, your host, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Michael Galley, to wrap up the show. Now, Mick, how have you been this week, my friend?
I've been good, Xavier. Again, we've had another week where we haven't spoken much, mate. I sort of miss our long chats that we've had
over
the past few months.
I've been catching up on all the, like, you know, the social commitments and catching up with family and actually ringing my parents and talking to them and stuff like that. So I've been kind of, when I have been on my phone, it's mostly been to, like, people I haven't spoken to in, like, months. So I've been doing all that stuff.
Yeah, that's understandable. Mate, yeah, no, good. After our last show, and might I add, mate, I listened to our last show. It was really awesome to have Charles on there, and I've had a lot of feedback from the guys up here and just inboxes saying it was really nice to hear his take on certain things. And then also I listened to your Girls Dig Radio the other day, mate, too, and that was another cracker show. You guys are really doing well there, and I thought it was awesome of Katie to come on there. Katie's very open and honest. She doesn't hold back, and you can't hold that against her.
No, I loved it. I loved that the way Katie spoke and the fact that she was open and honest. It wasn't just cookie cutter answers, you know what I mean, what people expect her to say. So, you know, she kind of, and she fessed up as well, like the fact that she did, she, you know, she was obviously hoping for a lot better placings at that Queensland show and obviously at the pro qualifier as well. But the Queensland show that she didn't, you know, she said she didn't congratulate the winner and stuff. And she kind of fessed up to that when most people would just say, oh, I just walked, you know, I just was done at the comp and walked off and. Yeah, stuff like that. Exactly. She really fessed up to it, and it was cool to hear about. So
I really enjoyed that. And apart from that, we had a I'm very impressed with myself. Saturday night was the boys' night out after their comps. Sonny and Aaron and Luke and all those guys, and we went for a really nice dinner at Koi. And I don't know, you probably would have seen the Facebook status go up after, but it looked like it was a rather messy night. And I pulled the pin at nine o'clock at night. And
wow.
I don't know what's wrong with me. so off I went home and had a good night's sleep. Woke up Sunday feeling really awesome from it. So, yeah. my nose is fixed.
Yes. How did that go?
Was it
painful?
Well, for people that don't know, I broke my nose. And no one really picked up on it because it didn't bruise at all, except for this real weird crooked part of my nose, which I don't know how you would have seen that. So we've gone back to the hospital and I had to wait a week or so. And Zaves, I won't lie to you. I can handle a bit of pain, but putting that back in, there was a younger sort of doctor, and he was pretty cool. And he sat me down in the chair, and a couple of interns and whatever there were there watching, which was a bit scary. And he sits behind you, and he's sort of glided his fingers down my nose, but obviously extremely hard to put it back in. Now, the first time he did it, water just gushed out my eyes straight away. It fucking killed. And it wasn't good enough. He said, have a look in the mirror. And I'm like, we need to do it again. And as much as I didn't want to do it again. So the second time was even worse. But I'm happy to report that my nose is now back in place. And we can move on.
Good to hear. It's funny how, like, as soon as you get some interns around, like, you know what I mean? Like hospital interns and stuff around a doctor doing something, it's almost like, shit, well, you know, there's just people around. So it's good, you know, it means something kind of thing. Yeah, so it makes it seem like a bigger deal.
Yeah, there were a few little, when he was doing it, going, oh, and I'm like,
It's like, I think they mentioned something like that on an episode of Seinfeld, actually. They're saying something like, oh, I haven't seen this before, you know, I've got to see this kind of thing. Yeah. So, I found it funny. But, how's it looking now? Is it swollen still? Or?
Well, even after he did it, I looked at him and said, you know, my main concern is, obviously, I do a lot of work with people, PT and stuff like that, and such shops. Is it going to bruise? And he's going, oh, it's hard to say. I mean, it didn't when it happened. And luckily, this time, there was nothing at all. No bruising, no swelling, nothing. Not a thing.
Wow, so you're good to go, then?
I was good to go. Off I went, out the door, and lolly-lo. I think I went to Macca's to celebrate.
Very nice. That's the way. But, yes. Actually, Mick, I finally saw Generation Iron yesterday.
Finally.
Yes. Finally.
What did you think?
I liked it. I mean, I went with Holly, and she actually initially didn't want to go. She's like, I just want to rest this weekend. Like, you know, because we've been, like, catching up with people and doing stuff, and it's like, you know, she works long hours as well, so she kind of just wanted to have a chilled weekend. But I was like, cause there's only two screenings this week. I didn't know if there's actually going to be more after this week. So I was like, I want to go. So I convinced, I talked her into going, and yeah, I liked it. And she actually, I think she liked it more than me. Yeah. Even. She was like leaning over and asking me stuff. She's like, do you reckon Branch Warren's done? And just stuff like that.
But can I ask you, did you laugh your ass off when Branch fell off the horse?
Yeah, I did. I did actually laugh pretty fucking hard.
And do you see what me and Gobel were talking about with Dennis Wolf with doing the interview, like trying to get the movie role?
Oh, that was it was terrible because I heard people say that he was a bad actor and stuff, and I thought, like, are people just going off, you know, because this bit was near the end of Dennis Wolf's bit, so I thought I was going off like the first bit where he's talking to a camera and stuff. I'm like, oh, he's fine, you know, like on the documentary, he's fine doing that. But no, when he went to go do that audition, oh my God. Yeah. And I knew it was going to be bad too, because I'm like, oh, this is the point where it's bad. And maybe the way they shot it made it look worse. I don't know, because I only showed a few little bits, but fuck.
Well, I can't see him being in an Oscar-winning role anytime soon.
I reckon he could even still play a small part in like a sitcom or something where it was like...
As a dumb person.
Yeah, as a dumb...
No offense, as a listener to our show, and you probably are, but no offense.
It's the classic, quote unquote, you know, dumb bodybuilder or whatever. Yes, you know what I mean? But yeah. I don't think he's gonna be doing any like Arnold type acting.
No. Speaking of Arnold, did you see the photo that's just been put up on the message forums in the last day or two?
I actually haven't seen it. I saw it posted, and because I've seen so many of these threads on these different like forums and stuff saying new Arnold picture, and he's always looking like, you know, a little bit better and stuff. But you said he's actually looking pretty nuts.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed. He's sort of standing side onto a cable crossover, and one hand's grabbing it from the top, and obviously he's got his biflex. But I mean, for 66 years of age, I think he went through that period there where he was governor, and he really couldn't focus on, you know, probably the amount of training he wanted to and that sort of stuff. But now you can see he's obviously back into the movies, and he's obviously taking training a bit more serious again. And like I said, for 66, fuck, I hope I look like that at 66.
Yeah, I don't think he's really training at all as governor, because he's imagined his responsibilities and stuff. And if people knew he's going to the gym for, you know, an hour or two a day, I think people would... it's almost like with a president. If he goes to, like, an NBA game, or he goes and does something, you know, goes and plays golf or something, people get on his case about, you know, he shouldn't be going playing golf. He should just be doing, you know, president-type duties.
Yeah, you're the president. You're the governor. What are you doing in the gym? Get out.
Yeah. I'd hate that. Like, can you imagine doing something like that?
Nah, not at all. Nah.
And even these days, people... Like, if you do go do something, you know what I mean? Like, if I go and do something on a weekday and I post it or something like that... People will kind of almost get on you about it. It's like, oh, yeah, well, he doesn't really work hard. And it's almost like seen as a bad thing if you don't work 12 hours a day these days, you know?
That's what I'm afraid of when I put pictures of my balcony or the beach and someone says, you don't do nothing. And I'm like, well, I do, but I just put a picture up.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you might go down to the beach for an hour on a weekday, but you've designed your life so you can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's like, if I see that, I'm like, oh, that's good. Like,
yes.
You know, they've designed their life so they can do that, and they can kind of do what they want. And they, you know, they've worked hard and been smart about it. And the people, like, look down on it these days. So I think that's...
Speaking of pictures, how funny was the picture you put up yesterday with Chris sitting there?
Oh, I loved it, yeah. Chris.
You couldn't have captured his face any better.
It was pretty funny, wasn't it? I put it up because I thought, I'll just take a bit of a selfie of... I was actually meaning to get him in it, you know what I mean? I think people thought I was just taking a photo of myself, but... I was meaning to get him in that photo, and it was right at the end of his set, I think. And so he finished, and he kind of looked at me like, what are you doing? And he looks real pissed off. He's just sitting down with dumbbells in his hands. It looks like I'm just taking a selfie of myself. And it's just, it looks a bit gay from my point of view. But I found it so funny that I just had to post that. And
it's a look of disgust on his face.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Yeah, he's not happy.
He's like, what are you doing?
But at the time, I didn't think he was not happy at all. Like, he seemed fine. So I think it's just captured his face for 1 second to where he looked pissed off.
And some girl commented on it. And you could tell she didn't know you guys were friends. So she
there's a few people like that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's fucking fantastic. Hey, and while we're still on pictures, should we bring up the picture of Cedric we just saw?
Yes, we should. Cedric McMillan, he obviously came third at the Arnold Classic, probably his best showing of all time, that or the New York Pro where he won that. And he obviously looked sensational there. And he's like, Chris Aceto said it last week on Heavy Muscle Radio, and then that picture came out of him and Fuad at, I think it was at, I don't know where it was actually, it was an expo over in Europe somewhere. I don't know if it was Body Power or what it was, but those two at the SciTech booth, and they're both doing the most muscular, and Cedric is just out of control. Man. I mean, Fuad isn't small in that photo. If you look at Fuad by himself, you're like, oh, yeah, Fuad looks like Fuad. Yeah. But Cedric is on another level, like, and Chris Zeta said he's having one of the best post-comp rebounds of all time. So
you just compare the two guys. Like you said, Fuad, or however you pronounce his little name, he's a big guy. Cedric dwarfs him. There's no, like, going, oh, yeah, they look all right. Cedric dwarfs this guy. Cedric's arms are humongous. Plus, look at the shape and the roundness and the muscle bellies of his arms, shoulders, and chest area. Man, this is a rebound from hell. You're right. This is one of the best rebounds I've ever seen. And he's still in good condition. He doesn't look fat or watery at all. So, man, I reckon I got a feeling we're going to see some really epic turnouts from Cedric in his next few comps this year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very, very excited to see how he does, because Cedric is not a guy that, like Chris said, I was saying, he said he's not a guy that would, you know, prepare his food or like that. Like, if he goes to Europe or something, he's not going to really prepare his food. He's just going to go with whatever he can kind of get in. And apparently he's eating a ton of food at the moment. Yeah. And he's just, obviously, he's not getting fat and he's just growing. So, I don't know.
Didn't that happen to Arnold? Didn't he, 2 days before or whatever, he was just at the tables eating. And I'm pretty sure Chris Aceto said this on the radio show. He was sitting there with Chris at the you know, a few days out, eating off the menu.
Yeah, that's what happened.
That's nuts.
He just basically didn't bring any food to the Arnold or anything. He just came with himself, you know what I mean? He had probably just brought his clothes and stuff. And he brought no food whatsoever, no supplements or anything like that, I don't think. And he just, basically bought off the menu. And he carved up on scrambled eggs and other stuff, which kind of seems strange. But obviously it worked. And it seems like Cedric, he stresses out a lot with comps, like he used to anyway. And I remember seeing some pre-comp interviews when he was with MD, and he just seemed like stressed and nervous and down. And apparently this time was a lot different, and he's a lot more relaxed. And I mean, that kind of just seemed to work for him, and just carbing up on whatever rather than a real regimented type carb up.
Yeah, I agree, mate. Like, whatever he's obviously changed, or he's de-stressed, or he's just obviously going on the show with the mentality of, you know, I'm just going to do what I want each day by instinct or whatever, something like that. It worked, because he looked fantastic at the Arnold Classic. He was one of, even though he didn't win, I still think Cedric was one of the standouts, because, you know, even though in our predictions, me, you and Scotty, we had, you know, he could have been the standout. Like, I don't think any of us predicted him to come in so big and full like that.
No, exactly. I mean, had Sean Roden and Dennis Wolf been a little bit off, you know, he would have won that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think he was that far off those guys. It seems like it was like first and second, then night and day, and then third, and then night and day, then fourth.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a clear third above everyone else in that lineup, like, clearly. And I don't think he was that far off those other two guys. And I would have liked to have actually seen a comparison, like, just of those three.
I agree with that, mate, for sure. And, Cedric. And still remember, when Cedric won the Nationals, Lee Haney, who's, you know, 8-time Mr. Olympia, came on board and said, out of anyone he's seen since his era, Cedric resembled Lee Haney the most, you know, with the shape of the muscle bellies. That's a big rap. That's huge.
Yeah, and it doesn't surprise me, because he does have just crazy, crazy, you know, shape, and he's got so much potential. And it seemed like, when was it, last year or whenever it was, when he did the New York Pro, and he looked, I mean, I don't know if you saw pictures from that, but he looked horrendous.
Like, yeah, that's where I was worried too, that he was going off the rails a bit.
Yeah, and from everything I heard, yeah, like, he did some things that obviously made him shrink down that much and stuff. But, you know, for him to come back at the Olympia and look good, and then to come back again and look much better at the Arnold, and he's not just looking better in terms of condition, he's not only getting harder, but he's getting bigger as well. So that's what excites me. And, you know, give it another, you know, 6 months or whatever it is till the Olympia, then, you know, he's going to be an absolute force, and I can't wait to see what he brings to that show.
Yeah, and for someone to have a successful rebound like he has from the Arnold, it means he's putting in the hard work. So he hasn't slackened off at all since that Arnold, which is great to see.
Yeah. Do you think, like, we'll kind of start seeing pictures of Cedric before the Olympia, and or before whatever the next show he does, because he's obviously still got to qualify, I believe. Do you think people will get real excited again, or do you think people will still be sceptical? Because when we saw pictures come out before this Arnold, people were just flat-out sceptical.
Yeah. I think he's changed my mind again now. I think he's obviously working with what's, you know, what he thinks is the right way for him. That Arnold Classic proved to me that he's got his head on straight. Hit the rebound, the pitcher we've just seen now, which is a, you know, it's a good month now since the Arnold. He's obviously been taking it serious. I don't know. I reckon Cedric's head's back in the game.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree as well. And hopefully nothing else kind of knocks him off the perch he's on now, because he's looking very, very good and he looks poised to place well at the Olympia, hopefully.
Obviously, Cedric's is SciTech, and I just told you before who else just joined up with him.
Yeah, Ben Pekulski, he's joined up with SciTech, and he was with Allmax for a fair while. And I mean, the way Ben Pekulski kind of operates, he's becoming obviously very popular in the industry. I imagine he'd be on a good deal. I mean, I can't imagine he'd take, you know, a small contract. So
yeah. The only thing that worries me, and I'm a big fan, I guess this goes for any company, and I understand pros have got to switch, or amateurs or whatever, to get the better deals, but the way he used to talk about Allmax, or especially, was it the amino charge, the intro?
Yeah.
Like, it got to the point where he would never use anything ever again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, and he was doing some of his videos and stuff that he put up as well, basically saying that's the best and stuff.
Yeah, this is the best intro you'll ever find, blah, blah, blah. So I understand, you know, you've got to go where the money is too. SciTech's a good brand. SciTech's a good company. So, you know, he's obviously gone on to someone that he probably thinks can help further his career. And you've got some big name guys in there. You know, you've got, what's his name again? Fawad?
Yeah, Fawad, Abiyad, and Cedric.
Yeah,
and
so you've got some, you know, that's three big names they've got right there.
And these guys as well, they travelled over to Europe a fair few times as well, because they're obviously quite big over there. I don't know if Ben's a big traveller, if he likes travelling or not. I don't think it bothers him too much, as far as I know. But
speaking of that, have you seen since Branch has come on with Gaspari? Have you seen Branch? They're popping up every, like, I know that was the deal where Flex obviously didn't want to do it anymore, and when he brought Branch on, he wanted Branch to do a certain amount of appearances every year. But have you noticed that lately on Facebook or you know, on some of the bodybuilding websites and that, like, Branch is doing a hell of a lot of appearances. He's popping up left, right, center.
I was actually wondering if he would want to do something like that, or if it'd be a contract where it was somewhere, you know, in between something like Flex did and what he did before. But yeah, it seems like he's just going all out and kind of just replacing, I suppose, Flex, which is kind of, you know, he's not as, I don't think he's as good, you know what I mean, in terms of that being an athlete that's on board. Obviously, Flex Lewis is 212 Olympia champion. But, you know, I think Branch still has that kind of freak factor, and I think people are still going to come out and see him. I mean, he's a fan favourite of a lot.
Yeah, so. I agree. I think Branch is still pretty popular. I'm not a fan of his physique, but I'm a fan of his work ethic and what he stands for. And it's not really till you see him in real life either that you appreciate his physique probably that little bit more, like when we saw him in Perth. He's a freaky guy. The DVD and stuff like that never sort of shows him up with his best. But speaking of Flex as well, did you see the photos Gary Phillips put up during the week on Facebook of when he shot Flex Lewis back in 2005?
Yes, 2006? I did, yeah. I think it might have even been, yeah, it was quite early on, and he said it was the first time he ever shot with Flex, and it was when he's an amateur, even. And, I mean, you just kind of have seen Flex. I mean, he hasn't just grown like crazy in 1 year, but he has grown very consistently and very well since then. So it's awesome to go back and see those pictures, isn't it? Like,
yeah, the first time, because when he put them up, and he put up a couple he took in golds as well, the first time I ever met Flex was 2005. It was that same time. And I remember, obviously, he wasn't a pro back then. And he was sitting in Max Muscle. Now, Max Muscle used to be right near Gold's Gym. And that's when Max Muscle used to be huge. All the pros used to shop in there.
Is that it still was there?
He had to move. Something happened a year or two ago where the lease ran up, and they didn't want to. The people who owned it didn't want to renew it. So Dave Ballet, who had it at the time, and I'm pretty sure still has it, he had to move it. But he's had to move it. Oh, man, he's had to move it to possibly three blocks away from Gold's in the wrong direction from the beach. So, I hate to say it. The times I've been in there, I still like visiting it, but the times I've been in there since it's moved, it's just not the same. It's not well looked after, and you just don't get the same flow in there. Whereas with the old one, it was just down the road from Gold's Gym, right next to a little restaurant where everyone ate, right behind the firehouse. So you can imagine the amount of the walkthrough it had. And I used to go in there after every workout almost just to see who was in there. And then that day, Flex was in there. And I'll never forget, he was sitting down just watching TV. And I sat down just to have a chat with him. And even back then, he was just so nice, so humble. But I'll never forget the size of his forearms. Like, they were just humongous, mate. He just always had those big forearms.
Yeah, they're freaky as hell, aren't they?
Yeah. And he wasn't obviously living in America at that time, and he'd come out just to train. And he back then, even then, he goes, you know, like he even said, he wanted to be pro. You know, he's doing everything he can to be pro. So awesome to see from then to where he is now.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember, like, the first time I kind of saw Flex was when he was training in that Coliseum gym that Mil Sarchev owned, which was in Fulton, California, Fulton. I believe. And I became a big fan of his then. And, I mean, Mills' guys back then, I remember, like, it was just, I mean, he had such a kind of presence online. And, if that was kind of like that now with Mills, and he continued that, I mean, you know, and Mills, you know, obviously didn't go through things he went through and stuff with his gym closing and all the other things. But if that hadn't happened, I mean, I reckon Mills could be making, you know, a lot more money than he's making now as well. And I'm sure he still is making great money, you know, prepping people and with his line of supplements. But could you imagine how much money potential he'd have now if he still owned that gym and still was doing the same thing with these pros?
That gym back then was really, I mean, I remember back in the day, like you had Sean Ray constantly trained at Mills' gym. Dennis James was always there training. But then you had Milos looking after guys like Johnny Jackson, Dennis Wolf, Hide Yamagishi. The list sort of went on. Nessery was looking after at one stage before they had their blow-up and stuff like that.
Gustavo Bedell.
Yeah, exactly. Gustavo. He had a list of a lot of guys. And that gym, I mean, that gym was, it was a pretty hardcore, epic gym. It was a fair way out. Like, if you're in, like, Venice area or whatever, it's a fair way to go. But in that peak time, it was mad.
How far is it? When you say it's a fair way, how long of a drive would it have been?
Maybe an hour.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
In Perth time, that's not far.
Okay. Well, Gold Coast time, that's fucking
exactly. I was talking to Holly about that the other day. Like, Platinum Labs, who have come aboard and sponsored me, their factory is actually like, or their warehouse is actually like almost an hour away from me. And it's like, oh yeah, it's an hour away, you know, but it doesn't even seem like that far. It's like,
Dave, I'm 5 minutes from where I work, where my main job is, my PTing studio. Like 5 minutes, and that to me is like it's just a nightmare.
That's fuck, ridiculous.
I just drive to work. Fuck.
My gym's like 20, 25 minutes away.
World's about 10.
Yeah. I like that drive though. Like, I find if a gym's too close to me, like if it's, you know, if it's like, you know, 2 minute, 5 minute drive or whatever like that, my mind's still at home kind of thing.
You're not pumped enough?
Yeah, I don't know. If I'm just going straight from working and then going straight to the gym, my mind's still on work and it's not on training. You know what I mean?
I had a good workout. Speaking of workouts, I had a really good workout today. We went and trained back. Speaking of that too, I trained with Adam Browner the other night.
Yes, I saw a picture that went up. He looks like he's staying in really good shape.
He is, mate. He actually, the All-Female Classic, for whatever reason, he got Charles Lothian to do a bit of a shoot with him there. And he was looking good. And then we trained back on Friday, and we both, you know, we're both with X2X, so we wanted to get a good photo up with their X2X tops on and stuff like that. For anyone who doesn't know X2X training gear, jump on the website www.x2xclothing.com.au and order your gym apparel.
Anyway. Very sly plug there.
Thank you very much. Thank you to Christine Enville and Troy Brenner for looking after me massively with that too. But anyway, so we train together, and he the fullness and fucking muscle values of Adam's are ridiculous. Like, honestly, he didn't have the best outcome of the pro qualifier, but these things happen. And at this stage, it looks like he's going to take a 2-year break and come back and try for it again.
Yeah, why is he taking 2 years? Like, it seems like it'd make a lot more sense for him to. I mean, obviously, his prep didn't go 100% to plan. He probably just killed himself a little bit too much at the end, maybe left it a little bit too late in terms of just getting in that real tight conditioning. I mean, if he's planning to stay lean, like he said he was when he posted a photo up on Facebook, why wouldn't he just try to go at it again? It doesn't seem like he needs a huge amount more muscle.
Yeah. I guess at this stage, too, it's still pretty fresh from the show. So, you know what it's like. Once you do a show, you're indecisive about a lot of things for a month or two.
Yeah.
So maybe he might change his mind again from there. I'd love to see him back in it within the year, get back up there again March next year. I think 2 years is too long to wait for something like that. No one's getting any younger. And take it from me, time flies in this sport, and you can get an injury, anything can happen, can knock you out totally. I don't know. I'd be getting up there within that 1 year time frame. I wouldn't wait to. I'd be up there. And he's got the genetics to put on size pretty damn quick. And he has had a very good rebound as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like we said, you know, hopefully Adam listens to this as well. And I'll tag him in it. But yeah, he's like, you know, when you obviously you don't place well or you don't place how you think you should, and you've got this idea in your mind that maybe you're going to turn pro and it's all going to be, you know, it's all going to go great from there, and it doesn't happen. Like, you might think, oh crap, I'm nowhere near good enough or whatever. But Adam has, I mean, had his prep gone really well, he might have won. You know what I mean? So he's got that potential. Yeah. He's that good, I think.
Yeah. It's not like he got up there and you thought, oh, yeah, he wouldn't have won anyway even if he was shape. You didn't think that at all. You're like, fuck, you know, if he was really 100% dry and crisp, who knows what would have happened?
Exactly.
So there you go.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, even in, like, close contests and stuff as well, if you're the person placing, if you place fourth and it's a lineup of 20 and, you know, you could have been really close to winning. But when you've won on stage, you might look at pictures, but you'll say, okay, yeah, I was fourth or whatever. Or you might say, oh, I was lucky to get fourth. And you might even talk yourself down a bit. So it's kind of funny, like, that just that placing will dictate how you think of your own physique and that your plans in the future and stuff. So,
yeah
I encourage Adam. Like, he looked, you know, not at his best in terms of conditioning and stuff like that at the Pro Q, but, I mean, he's not far off.
No, not at all. No, I hope he gets up there in that year.
Yeah, Mick, I wanted to mention, actually, we were talking about Generation 9 earlier. I wanted to mention another guy from there when we was kind of talking about Cedric, but there's going to be, like, this Olympia is going to be set up pretty well in terms of, like, wild cards, guys that can kind of, you know, that haven't been right up in there in that top five but can kind of break in. So I've obviously mentioned Cedric before. And someone in Generation 9, I actually enjoyed their bit a fair bit in the movie, is Rolly Winkler. Now, we saw, like, I saw in the movie, obviously, he's with Grandma back then, and who was his trainer, and that was, I found that pretty funny. Like, it's kind of funny that she's, like, the go-to woman over in Holland.
Yeah, but,
obviously, you know, she knows what she's doing. She was an ex, I think she's an ex-pro, I mean, they said.
Okay.
So I don't know if she was an ex-female pro bodybuilder or what was the deal, but, you know, she obviously, you know, knows her stuff in terms of, you know, drug cycles and all that kind of stuff, or at least knows a fair bit to get Rolly Winkler from, you know, just joining up at a gym to where he is now, or where he was, a movie. And obviously, you know, at the time when this was shot, Rolly was not at his best, like the movie. But you kind of get to see, like, you kind of see when he's, you know, on stage at Tampa, you see some of that footage and stuff, and you see how much potential he has there, and then you've obviously seen what he did at the Olympia. Obviously, he couldn't compete at the Arnold and the Australian Pro because he had a motorcycle accident, which was actually funny that it showed that in the movie. It showed him, they said, you know, when he gets away from bodybuilding.
Yes. Wasn't she saying not to ride the bike anymore or something?
Yeah, she said something like that. He's on the internet too late and all this stuff. So, kind of, I love it how she, like, cracked it with him and, like, grabbed his phone and he's like, phone off, time for bed, and, like, turned off the light. I loved that. It was basically, you know, his mum kind of thing, but, you know, he's 30, obviously 30-something years old or whatever he is. But he's a guy that is a massive wild card for me in terms of the Olympia, hopefully this year. Granted, he does qualify, because I think he plays 7th at the Olympia, which isn't an automatic qualification, unfortunately for him. And, you know, he couldn't compete at the Arnold and the Australian show, so he's still got to qualify. So I don't know what show he's going to hit up. Obviously, he had that motorcycle accident where it kind of took a bit of a chunk out of his quad and all that stuff. Do you think he's an automatic qualification now, and do you think he'll do well at the Olympia?
Obviously, like you said, he does have to qualify again. It just depends on his injuries. Like, I still haven't heard since that how severe they are, like, you know, how quickly he's going to get back to good health and he'll be able to squat again or do all those sorts of things. So
who's Rolly signed with? Is it Flex?
Yeah, he's with Flex, yep.
They should literally be following that and, like, you know, doing articles and stuff on where he's at, because I haven't heard anything as well.
I haven't heard a thing since it happened. Not a thing. Mm. So it's hard to say. I mean, hopefully he doesn't get too out of shape, so, you know, he can sort of pinpoint something and maybe go hard for 8 weeks for it. I dare say the New York Pro would be out. I haven't heard anything about him doing that. So then you've got to think the next lot of shows after that are your August ones before the Olympia.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be interesting because, you know, Victor's going to be doing Victor Martinez said he's going to be doing the last qualifying show. He's leaving it to the very last one, which I can't even remember which one it is now, but yeah, he's leaving to the very last show to qualify, which is kind of a bit dangerous because if he doesn't win it, then likely he probably won't qualify unless he finishes second and that gives him enough points from the Arnold.
Yeah.
But, you know, Victor Martinez pretty much has to win that, so it's almost make or break for Victor. And it might even be make or break for Rolly if he does the same show.
Yeah, it's mate, I've seen this time and time again, but a lot of guys, they'll risk it right at the end and they don't get the placing they want and then they don't make the Olympia. And then I guess the only good thing about this one this year is the amount of shows after the Olympia where a lot of lower names, they're going to qualify for the Olympia next year because I can't see all the top guys doing, what was it, 8 shows post-Olympia?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. There's a huge amount.
So I can't see all the top guys doing all those shows. There's no way. So there's going to be a lot of guys, maybe second or third tier down the ladder, begging to qualify now for 2015.
Yeah, I was just thinking, actually. Yeah, because I actually forgot about all the shows after the Olympia last year that have already got guys, you know, points and has already qualified guys. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, I'm going to get look.
The Tijuana Pro, we got Dexter one there. Who got second and third? They were no names, weren't they?
I don't want to say they're no names because I can't even remember what it was.
They're not top guys, I guess. But see, depending, they might get lucky too before the Olympia in a couple of comps. You never know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you get a couple of second places and you get 4 points at one, you get 4 points at another, you maybe get 3 points at a third at another, you're probably going to have it. You got 11 points, you know what I mean? So you probably got enough points to qualify. I think the final qualifying spot last year was about at around 8 points or 7 points or something. So you only really need a few seconds and, you know, you're going to be up there. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's definitely definitely plausible.
Okay, I've got the standings here and who's already qualified. So qualified.
I knew you'd get that from somewhere.
Yeah, I was on my iPad there just quickly doing it and wasting some time.
Fucking iPad, Joey, back up. Fuck. Oh, man.
So basically...
So, anyway, go on, and I'll tell you Joey's story after.
Okay, so the top five from the Olympia, 2013 Olympia, have already qualified, which also it didn't change as well, because obviously Dennis Wolf won the Arnold Classic, so the winner from the Arnold Classic qualifies, but he was already qualified. So we've got five qualified now. We've got Phil Heath, we've got Kai Green, Dennis Wolf, Sean Roden, and Dexter Jackson. So that's the five that are qualified, and the points standings at the moment... So this is obviously from the post-Olympia comps last year and obviously the Arnold Classic and the Australian Pro. And yeah, that's it, I think, so far. So we've got Victor Martinez on 9 points, Evan Centipani on 8 points, Cedric McMillan on 7, Branch Warren on 7, William Bonac on 7, Fred Smalls on 4, Martin Kellstrom on 4, Kevin Orifam on 3, Mark Lamelli on 2, oh, geez, these
are... Were they the Tijuana guys?
Yeah, these are the Tijuana guys.
Oh, Jesus.
Alfredo Azbieda?
Oh, okay.
Oh, geez, I'm struggling with that. Oh, and Ed, he's on one, and Ed Dunn's on one as well, so... Yeah.
See, you know, it's funny, I keep forgetting about guys like Branch. He has to keep going. He's got to pull some more comps out soon.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? Like,
he wants to qualify, yeah.
And it's interesting that he didn't... maybe because of his Kasparo contract is the reason he didn't go on and... do some of these post, post Arnold comps, because he doesn't look like he's gonna stay in condition to me.
Yeah, no, Branch never tends to stay in like tip top shape, does he?
Nah. So Victor Martinez, granted because the thing is about this point system, the top five now, number five has 7 points, which is much higher than previous years, at this point. But some of these guys might win shows. So you got William Bonac,
Did you see the photo of went up with him today?
No, I didn't.
5 weeks out, he's doing a hands together most muscular, like Kevin Lebroni shot. Fucking hell.
Looks crazy.
He looks nuts.
Yeah. He's going to be the front runner, I think, or one of the front runners for that Arnold Brazil title. So granted, you know, if he wins it, or if he places very well, he's pretty much punched his ticket to the Olympia. Yeah. And then obviously, who else is doing it out of that group? I don't think there's anyone. Yeah, but there's no one else out of that, someone on the list that's got points already, but... He's doing it, I don't think. Maybe Fred Smalls is doing it, I'm not too sure. But, obviously Lionel Baicki's doing it. There's a few other big names as well. So it's gonna be very interesting. Very, very interesting. But, Mick, before we wrap up the show, because we've gone, you know, we've dragged this out considering it's a slow week.
All right, haven't we? There's not much bodybuilding talk going on at the moment, so we've done well.
This week has been very, very quiet, like surprisingly quiet. So it's because we've got a bit of a lull in shows at the moment. Like, we haven't got many bodybuilding shows, you know, I think it's still a few weeks away till we've got another one, whether it's, I think it's the Arnold Brazil or the Europa that's up next. Yeah. So that's in a few weeks' time. So
next week, I'm going to have another guest person on my show.
On your show?
Oh, sorry. on my segment.
Who's that going to be? Or is that a secret?
I can't say just yet.
Oh.
But it will be someone who's recently competed and is just dropping over for a coffee, and I'm just going to put him on the spot.
Excellent. I like it.
Okay. I like it. So, and then I'm going to leave it up to you to win questions straight away and just answer. Like, you can give them the hard ones.
Well, you can tell me as soon as we stop recording, though.
You could always cut me out right now.
No, don't say now.
I'll ask you a list of a couple, and I'll just see whoever takes the offer up who's not working.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I like it. I just want to mention, before we wrap up the show, we had WA's own figure competitor. We had Sam Attrell. She actually went over to America and competed in, I don't know if you've heard of his show, Mick, but it's the IFB Governor's Cup. Or the NPC Governor's Cup. She actually went over there, and she competed... I'm going to obviously talk about this more on Girls Dig Muscle Radio, but she competed over there and she won the Masters over 45 in figure. She won a few categories. Like, she did, I think, three categories and she won two of them, and or two or three of them. I don't want to cut her short on that. And then she placed second in her open class. So she went over there, obviously, you know, over 45 and placed second in open class and absolutely killed it. And that's as far as I know, that's a big NPC comp in America. So I want to congratulate her, and she's amazing. Like, you know, for an over 45, she is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I bumped into her now and then, but remember she was training at the same gym as us in Perth, Melbourne.
Yes, she was. So and I saw her, I think about a week ago. She's doing a photo shoot in my gym, and I went, I saw her. She's doing like lat pull downs. I said, "Who the hell is that?" And I kind of like said to someone, "I don't know." And then, because I didn't see her face or anything, and then someone said, "Oh, that's Sam in there doing a photo shoot." And I was like, "Oh, really?" I was like, "Shit, she's not look her age." So
she's looking great for that age, mate.
Yeah, so I want to congratulate her, and that's about it for this week's episode. I want to thank a few of our sponsors. We've got Gripped Fitness Accessories. We're obviously on board with you, Mick, as well. We've got ATP Science. On board with you as well. And I'm going to be obviously contacting Matt Legg, and hopefully on this episode we have 2 minutes with a scientist. If not, it will be on next week's episode for sure.
I trained Matty this morning on our usual 6:30 a.m. sessions, and Matty is looking better and better, mate. He's really doing well. I love it.
Yeah, he's killing it, isn't he? He's always looking. I actually saw a photo of him and his kid go up this week as well. His kid's wearing a little like Batman onesie, I think it was.
Alfie's so cute, mate. He's about 6 months, but he's teething and everything already. He's doing everything that you shouldn't be doing at that age.
Oh, really?
But such a cute kid. Eh? Matt, they're such a good family, Matt and his wife, Milan.
Yeah, I've only met Matt, but his kid's definitely a cute kid, and Matt's probably like using him as a little like guinea pig or something to speed up the process or something. Get it all out of the way.
Beast football player or something.
But I want to obviously thank ATP Science and My Muscle Chef. Their orders close midnight on Tuesday nights for the weekend's orders, so make sure you go on mymusclechef.com. I think it's .au. I don't know. Don't want to get that wrong, but try them both. Okay. But Mick, this is the end of episode number 100.
Oh shit! I forgot about that.
I have
100.
It's not going to be in Bahamas.
To the Caribbean. Are you kidding me?
You're not going to get the trip, but I will be sending you something, though. So there's something coming in the mail.
I forgot this episode 100.
I know. I didn't want to mention it to you till the end. I knew you'd get too nervous and excited and stuff. So.
I never get excited, do I?
You get a little bit excited.
Well, that's good, mate. And congratulations from you. You've been there from day one. It's a massive effort, Zave, and I've seen this show progressing and bigger and bigger from that very first episode, and mate, you are absolutely nailing it lately. You're getting some killer interviews. Your interviewing style has gotten better and better, especially in the last 6 months. I've noticed, like, you've really got some killer questions coming out. And I do know how much work you put in behind the scenes. Like, a lot of people don't. I know how much you put in, mate. So you're perfect for this job, I'm telling you.
Thanks, mate. And obviously the addition of you as well, and obviously the work of Scotty. You know, both of you being super consistent and getting content and all that kind of stuff has helped me an absolute ton and made my life a bit easier. And you had a bit of content this week as well. I was kind of struggling this week.
We're like a well-oiled machine.
We are, aren't we? we had a bit of struggles with the connection today, but...
That's right.
We work through it and we get it done, and I'm proud to say we have not missed one episode this whole time. We've done it every single week. There has not
even
been...
Even in Vegas.
So from the very start, all 100 episodes have been one week after the other. So I'm extremely proud of that. And I want to thank, obviously, our sponsors big time for supporting the show. And without them, this show would not be possible because I would be making a loss. So a massive thanks to them. And obviously thanks to you, Mick, and thanks to Scotty and Dave Plumber, obviously, and everyone out there, because and obviously thanks to, well, I'm hoping obviously this comes through, because obviously sometimes people drop out with interviews, but I spoke to Vince Taylor this morning, and I'm meant to be interviewing him tomorrow for this episode. By this time, hopefully everyone's listened to a Vince Taylor interview. It's been really good. But if not, we do have other guests lined up as well, and I've talked to a few other people as well. So hopefully we'll have a few interviews on this episode, and it will be a big one. And please, everyone who shared the show out there as well, and everyone that listens and has rated us and reviewed us and stuff on iTunes, that's a massive help to us. And if you guys can keep doing that and keep supporting the show, it's going to keep coming to you. And we're hopefully, you know, the more support we get, you know, we might pick up one more sponsor or two, and that might mean another show. It might mean, you know, something else down the track. So please support us, share the show, encourage your friends and stuff to listen, and rate and review us on iTunes. Yes. But Mick, that is it for episode number 100 of Aussie Muscle Radio. And remember, with Aussie Muscle Radio, the truth hurts.
Aussie Muscle Radio is a presentation of RX Muscle Australia, the truth in Australian bodybuilding. Visit rxmuscle.com.au for all the latest bodybuilding news, videos, contest coverage, and so much more. Tune in next week at this same time for another round with Xavier Wills and Scott Goble, only on Aussie Muscle Radio.